right, all right, all right. Hi, we're early. Hi. We usually start at 1, but we're following a late Hawks game, and so we're starting at 12:30. So I know at 1 o'clock, if people are going to tune in and they don't hear the opening song, they're going to go, what the hell? What's going on, man? So we're starting early. We've got an extra half an hour this morning with you guys, and we're happy about that. It's Nick DiGilio. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and later on for your Fly Jams request, because it is Friday, and that means Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up here on the show. Also coming up, we will have a visit with Dan Feinberg. Now, he visits with us once a month. Normally, he visits with us on Thursday mornings. But he's with us on a Friday this morning because the Golden Globe nominations were announced yesterday morning. And we wanted to make sure we got his thoughts on the TV side of the Golden Globe nominations. And we will do that with Dan. And I'll talk about the movie side of the Golden Globe nominations. We'll talk about the snubs and the surprises and basically how dumb a lot of the... A lot of the nominations are. We'll talk in general about the Golden Globes and the history of the Golden Globes and all that cool stuff. So Dan Feinberg will be joining us. And then after the break here, we're going to talk with Herb Weisbaum. He's our buddy. He's our consumer guy. He's an Emmy Award winning reporter, covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. And you can read all of his stories at consumerman.com. We got some tips here for charitable dollars. For charity, and which, like, as I know, during the holidays, a lot of people give, and in general. And if you have any questions or concerns about consumer issues, Herb's going to be here live, and we can answer any and all of your questions via phone call or text. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Herb Weisbaum will be joining us, and then all of our regular Friday features. So that's what's coming up on the show. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
Feels like it's 1 o'clock, doesn't it?
Just a bit, yeah.
So we start a little bit early. Always, get an extra half an hour with our friends here.
Absolutely.
On a Friday morning. Friday morning, you got plans for the weekend?
I will be attending the Bears game on Sunday.
Ooh, bundle up.
Yep.
Bundle up. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, my wife's always kind enough to get me Bears tickets for my birthday. So,
Jen DeSalvo is leaving right now. How cold is it in the newsroom that you had that hat on?
How cold is it in the newsroom that I was the hat on?
It's actually not that cold. Oh. I'm just very weird.
Oh. I didn't say a word.
I think I had it at like 74 degrees and I was still wearing my poofball cap.
I thought it was like a tundra in there, the way you looked, the way you were all bundled up. But you're just weird.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Jen. Have a great weekend.
See
you later. Jen DeSalvo is out of here. You're going
to
go to the Bears game on Sunday?
Yep.
Yeah, bundle up, man. It's going to be cold.
That's all right.
It's a night game, too, man.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
It's a big game, too.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great, man. How'd you get tickets?
Eileen's always kind enough to get me Bears tickets for my birthday. And
wow, what a game, though.
Right. My aunt has a friend who works for them, and so it just worked out that this was the game she had.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
well, good for you, man.
Very lucky, yeah.
Good for you. That's going to be fun.
Yep.
All right, cool. You're not working Monday morning.
That's why.
Okay, so you're taking Monday morning off because you're going to the Bears game, and it's going to go late. And so there he goes. Dan Long will be in.
Yep.
Yeah, and we'll have all of our regular Monday morning features, which my dad will call in, tell a joke, and we'll have three critics with us.
Yep.
Total. We'll have Eric, Jim, who's been kind enough to sit in, and Colin comes back, but we wanted to give Jim a chance to review some movies and say a proper goodbye. But he'll be back again in the new year.
Right.
So there you go. All right, have a great time.
Thank
at
you.
At the Bears game. And he's here all morning long in the newsroom, even though he technically has not started yet. It's Vic Vaughn, who will have his first report at 1 o'clock. Hi.
Good morning, sir. Yeah, the last time this happened, I missed saying hi to you guys, so I thought I'd jump over here.
I'm glad you did. So how you been?
What about that Hawks game, man?
Oh,
I don't even want to get you started,
man.
But I was listening on as I was getting ready to come in, and
yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I was all excited, too, because when Dan came to pick me up, Anisimov just made that
yeah.
sick goal. And I got in the car, and I'm like, they just took the lead. And then, like, with 3 minutes later, it was like, oh, come on.
Not even. I think it was 42 seconds or something.
42 seconds, and they scored two goals in 12 seconds.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, but
anyway. Then we'll hear the Express later on this morning.
Will.
What do you got going on for the weekend, Vic?
It is jam packed tonight. Jeannie's Company's Christmas party, which is always fun.
It's okay.
They really spare no expense. Then Saturday, the Merchandise Mart has an annual thing they do called One of a Kind Holiday Show. It's a blast.
Okay.
Really cool little shops they open up in there. Sunday, something. I can't remember. We have something to do Sunday. Oh, we're going to get our skates sharpened Sunday for sure, because we're going to go to that United Center thing later this month.
Oh, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, so it'll be fun.
You know what's? You know where they have an ice rink that's really, really cool?
We're across the street from my apartment.
Well, yeah, okay.
Maggie Bailey Park.
You got that one right. No, but there's really a really nice one right in the center of Rosemont, right in that entertainment district.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. Yes, yes, yeah. That is nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When that's a nice one there.
When I had my screening of Scrooged last Tuesday, we drove through the center because we were getting to the theater from the Crown Plaza Hotel, from the Caddyshack restaurant.
Right.
And we went through, and it's very festive how they've set that up. There's lights everywhere and trees and everything, and there are a ton of people skating. It was really neat.
It's impressive what they've built there.
Oh,
that
Rosemont's
complex is
it's
amazing.
It's insane.
There's and like you've said before, you can take a train if you live in the city.
Exactly.
It's really cool.
Get off at the Blue Line, and man, and I'll tell you what, it's beautiful. On River Road there, in Rosemont, the lights. Have you ever seen the lights?
Oh, yeah. You mean that? It's like a little neighborhood, isn't
it's
it?
It's the stretch. It's by the Donald, the convention center. It's like from the Kennedy mm-hmm. all the way down.
Yes, they
it's
do it every
beautiful.
Year. I drive by. I thought maybe it was just a neighborhood that's really festive, but I don't know. Maybe it's the village.
It's the village. It's
gorgeous,
Rosemont.
Yeah.
They do it. And it's blown up over there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
that's actually fun if you have time. I don't have a car anymore, so I don't do it. But when I used to drive, we would go into that area and go drive through it and look, at the lights.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Okay, cool. All right, well, everybody looks like they're going to have a good weekend, fun weekend. I'm not doing anything. You know what I'm going to do? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm catching up on my screeners. Because I'm with the Chicago Film Critic Association, I get a lot of screeners of movies during awards season, and I've got a stack of them on my coffee table, and I'm going to go through a lot of those. I'm going to spend a lot of time watching movies for the year-end show. So that's what I'm going to do, catch up on that stuff. All right, why don't we take a break, right? Herb Weisbaum is going to join us right after the break, and we want to hear from you. If you have any questions or concerns about consumer-related issues, Herb is here to help you. 312-981-7200 for talk and text right now. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up straight out of context. Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. Also, we're going to get a special Friday morning appearance from Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And we're going to talk about the Golden Globe nominations and much more. The Golden Globe on the TV side. I'll handle the movie side a little bit later on, and we'll talk Golden Globes in general. A little bit later. That's what's coming up. Also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. We're always happy to welcome our good friend Herb Weisbaum to the show. He is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can read all of his stories. You can subscribe to his newsletter at consumerman.com. If you have any questions or concerns that are consumer-related, scam-related, or any of that kind of stuff, Herb's here to help you. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Herb back to the show. Hi, Herb.
And you are the highlight of my month.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank
you. It's a true story.
Yeah.
I love doing this.
Oh, we love having you on, Herb. It's great.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about you, just to get up to speed, as we always do.
Oh, sure. I'm the consumer reporter out in Seattle for a local radio station. Also write a weekly column for NBCNews.com. Have been covering the consumer beat for about 35 years now. And I absolutely hate ripoffs and scams and people that try to take advantage of us. And I'm here to try to share advice that helps you protect yourself.
That's right. And you can follow him on
Facebook. I have a website, consumerman.com, where I post all my stories. And I'm just here to try to make you a smarter consumer, because we sure all need help this day and age with all the tricks that are going on.
There's no question about it. By the way, I do want to mention, before we get into the consumer stuff, you kissed a goat.
Yes.
Yes,
I recently joined the board of directors of a great animal sanctuary out here in the Northwest, just outside of Seattle, called Posado Safe Haven. Posado was a donkey who lived at the local park right near my house here, and was actually tortured for hours and killed by some teenage kids 26 years ago.
Man.
And at that point in time, there was no law in the books for animal cruelty in the state of Washington, believe it or not, that would cover this case. They basically got charged with being in a park after dark.
And
one of my colleagues at the local TV station here decided to do something about it, got a law passed, founded this great organization, PosadoSafeHaven.org, and bought 85 acres of land out in the country. And it's not only dogs and cats like you see at a shelter, but this is a sanctuary. There are farm animals. You go out there and there are pigs and chickens and ducks and cows. And I got kissed by Dudley the goat the other day. The picture of me on my Twitter page or my Facebook page where he's giving me a kiss?
Yeah.
They wanted a picture because I was out there for a meeting. I wasn't sure, to tell the God's honest truth, I wasn't sure if he was going to kiss me or bite my nose off.
Yeah, I would be a little...
Give me just a little kiss. He was very sweet, very, very sweet guy. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, that sounds like a fantastic organization. It really does.
Yeah, it's really nice to help. It's when you, I hate to tell you this, Nick, but when you see some of the brutality that people do to animals, it's just, it's beyond belief.
Yeah.
And this group is there to save them, rescue them. We just rescued, with other groups in the state, 250 dogs from a puppy mill situation and 40-something cats from a hoarder, a woman who unfortunately had dementia and was keeping all these cats.
Oh.
And it looked like a carpet when you actually went in there was actually fecal material on the floor.
Oh, man.
It was so, they had actually wear hazmat suits to get in to rescue these cats.
Oh,
so it's just a really, really wonderful organization. I'm proud to be part of them.
And that's is there a website that people can go to?
Sure. It's PosadoSafeHaven.org, PosadoSafeHaven.org. And we just put out a calendar, and my guy, Sam, is Mr. December.
Oh, look at that.
So while you're at a commercial break, you and Dan click on and look at that, and my boy standing up on his hind legs is Mr. December.
Oh, there you go. That's fantastic. What a great organization. I'm glad we were able to talk about this, Herb. That's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen, there's a lot of charity that goes on. I know you wrote a piece, and it was originally Giving Tuesday, but at this time during the holidays, people feel charitable and want to give some money to some good causes. And you have some tips to avoid scams, when you're during this time of year. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Nothing annoys me more, truly, than con artists who try to pretend to be charitable organizations and steal money all year long, but especially at the holiday time, because not only are they stealing from you, but they're also robbing from the charity that you wanted to give money to.
Right.
And while most charities are legitimate, there are the bad guys out there, and they take advantage of times like this where everybody wants to open their hearts and their wallets to give before the end of the year or during the Christmas season or whatever, and steal tens of millions of dollars a year. So I put together for one of my stories a list of tips on making charitable contributions, just to give you a fact here that will make people pay attention. Just one single group of charities, four bogus charities all run by the same people that were shut down by the Federal Trade Commission 2 years ago that were supposedly raising money for cancer and breast cancer, they are accused of bilking donors out of $187 million.
Oh, my God.
Just four charities, supposed charities run by a group of people. So that gives you an idea. That's just one. And, state attorney generals are always suing them, and the feds are suing them. It gives you some idea of how serious this problem is. I mean, we're talking probably hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So the first thing that I think folks have to know is that just because someone asks you for money or just has a good appeal, either on the phone or a website pitch or an email or a letter, whatever, does not mean that you want to give them your money. They may not be a good organization. They may be a good organization that won't use your money wisely, or maybe con artists trying to steal your money. So you've got to really be careful who you give your money to. And one of the greatest ideas that was given to me by experts who talked to me for this story, and we can run down some tips on how to spot charity scams and what to do, but is rather than doing it on a hit-and-miss basis, sit down with your family. It may not be too late now if you haven't finished your year-end giving, and make up a budget of your charity. Make a charity budget. How much do we want to spend overall? And then which kinds of organizations do we want to support? And maybe research a few and decide where you want to give your money. A, you'll know you're giving it to a reputable charity that uses your money wisely and does good things. And B, if you get hit up by outside solicitations, you can honestly say with a clear conscience, I'm really sorry, but I've already allotted my money for this year, and I don't want to do it. You don't have to feel guilty about turning down a solicitation. I just think that's an absolute wonderful idea, and I hope people take advantage of that. It's a very, very smart way to approach this whole thing.
Yeah, and also doing some research, correct?
Absolutely, because, you know, and it's really easy to do, because with this day and age, thanks to the internet, there's three websites that I go into great detail about on my story that's on consumerman.com, but they're basically three, and you don't even have to go to all three, but there's give.org, and that's the website run by the Better Business Bureau, and they have reports on about 1,300 national charities, and then local chapter reports on about 10,000 charities in both the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
They don't rank them, but they tell you if they meet their 20 standards, how they do.
I've donated through give.org for the hurricanes and a lot of the other national disasters.
I don't think you can give through that, but you check them out through give.org.
Yeah.
Maybe you can link to the charity through there, but that's a way to check them out.
There are links you can get through.
Okay.
That's how I've done it for the hurricane relief.
Good.
So.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Then there's one called Charity Navigator, and they have information on all 1.5 million nonprofits registered by the U.S., and they actually give them stars, from 0 to 5 stars, and they evaluate a whole bunch of things like how well they use their money and what kind of board they have and their level of commitment and transparency and that kind of thing. If you see a charity with 3 or 4 stars, they meet or exceed the industry standard for financial health and accountability. There's also a list of charities that get 0 or 1 star. You might want to steer clear of those.
Mm.
And then the third one is called Charity Watch, and that's been around for about 25 years or so, and they use an A-plus to an F rating to show how efficiently a charity uses donations. And they actually have a list of top-rated charities that generally spend 75% or more of their budgets on programs and $25 or less to raise $100 in support. And that's another thing. A lot of people, when I talk to them, think, well, if it's a registered charity, if they're registered with the IRS or signed up with my state, as many states require, I can assume they use the money wisely. There is no law, there is no regulation that says how much money a charity must spend on charitable causes. I mean, you could spend, there are charities, quote-unquote charities, spend 70, 80, 90% of the money they raise on administration or overhead or whatever. You know, a good charity in my book uses 30% or less for all the stuff and the rest goes to the charitable cause. But you can't assume. There's no regulation. There's nothing that tells them what they have to do. You've got to take the time and check on your own and make sure they're using your money wisely.
And so those three, they're easy to access. It's give.org,
charity navigator,
and charity.org,
and charitywatch.org. So yeah. Three that are really, really good.
And you also have a detail here that many states require charities to register in order to solicit.
Right. I don't know what your state does, whether it's the Secretary of State or the Attorney General's office, but almost all states require them. And again, if they're not registered, and somebody said, hey, you should check out this charity when I was at work the other day, and I went on, and, you know, like, you should donate or mention them on your show, and it's like they're not registered, they shouldn't be collecting money in this state. And it's like, uh-oh. And, you know, so that's something you need to look at as well, because by law, they have to be in most states registered to collect money in that state.
Okay. All right. And we're going to take a break for the news, Herb. But when we come back, I want to go through the five tips that you have.
Oh, sure.
For people. Okay,
absolutely,
and
absolutely.
That's as part of this article that is up on the website at consumerman.com. It's the five tips to avoid scams and make smart decisions with your charitable dollars. Herb, hang on, okay?
You got it, Nick.
All right, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He is the Emmy Award winning reporter who covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can check out his website at consumerman.com. Follow him on Facebook at consumerman and on Twitter at the Consumer Man. We've got much more to talk about. And again, if you have any questions or concerns about scams or consumer-related issues, we would love to take your phone calls or your texts. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. By the way, if you're wondering why you're not hearing the regular intro at the top of the show, it's because we started at 12:30 this morning, a little extra half an hour. So we played our intro at 12:30 this morning, and we are here now until 5 o'clock. It's the Allstate Skyline Studio that we're live in. It is Friday. That means all the regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up, and we're going to get a special Friday morning visit from Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Yesterday, the Golden Globe nominations were announced, both on the TV side and the movie side, and we're going to analyze the TV side of those nominations with our good friend Dan Feinberg, and that will be coming up after the 1:30 news. Right now, Our good friend Herb Weisbaum is with us, Emmy Award-winning reporter covering the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. His website is consumerman.com. If you have any concerns or questions that are scam or consumer-related, we would love to hear from you. Herb is here at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Herb back to the show. Welcome back, Herb.
Hello, Nick.
All right. We were in the middle of talking about what you can do with your charitable dollars is to not get scammed during the holiday season. People like to give money. And you have some tips to avoid getting scammed.
Absolutely. We have five of them here, so I'll run them down to you. First of all, resist the urge to give on the spot. I will never give to anybody who shows up at the door. It's always risky. You have no idea who they really are. And the same, in my book, the same rule goes for a phone call. You have no idea really who that person is on the other end of the line. It could be somebody legitimate. It could be a clever con artist trying to steal your credit or debit card information. There is no way for you to really know. If for some reason you sound interested in what they're pitching, ask them to send you information. If it's a legitimate charity, they will. And if it's like most people who call me, the phone goes click as soon as they say, could you please send me some information?
Yep.
So, be aware of that. I just wouldn't do that sort of thing. It's just absolutely way too risky. Number two, don't respond to pressure tactics. If you're getting the, you know, we need this now, or the, we got to do this, you got to give me your number, legitimate charities never pressure you to give immediately. They're very happy to send you information, tell you about their mission, their programs. They'd love you to become a long-term donor. And as one charity expert said to me, it's really okay to say no even to a heart-wrenching appeal. You've got to just check them out and know that you're giving your money wisely and where you want to give. So that's number two.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out for sound-alike names. And this is really important. A lot of charities have the words cancer or heart or veterans or children in their names. And a lot of questionable groups very often choose names that sound like famous, well-known charities because they know they can fool you. So you can't just go on the name or you think that sounds like the charity you were looking into or care about. You've got to really make sure that it's the charity that you want to give to and that you've chosen, not just the charity that has the name cancer or breast cancer or children or veterans or anything like that in their name. So it's really, really important. I mean, that group I told you about earlier, the four bogus charities you have Federal Trade Commission shut down for taking in $187 million bogus collections.
Yeah.
I mean, they had great names. Cancer Fund of America, Children's Cancer Fund of America, Cancer Support Services and Breast Cancer Society. I mean, who wouldn't want to give to those groups, right?
Right.
They were con artists who were just trying to steal money, and they used them. I mean, these guys, I've read these charges from the feds. These kind of guys, they buy sports cars, they buy mansions, they use them on drugs. You're giving money that you thought was going to help a worthwhile cause, and then these guys are getting it, which, as I said before, just really burns me that they're not only stealing your money, but they're stealing from the charities that are trying to do a good deed. So that's why you really got to be careful.
Okay.
That's number three. Number four, don't be swayed by gifts. A lot of charities will mail out solicitations at this time of year, and they'll put something in it, address labels or greeting cards or calendars. The free gifts tend to increase donations, which is why they send them out. It gets your attention. Don't feel you have to donate in order to keep these items. You don't, and don't feel you have to make a donation just because you got an item. Like anything else, if that gets your attention, you'll learn about the charity, and it's of interest to you, great. And if not, a free gift is a free gift, then just enjoy it. And finally, know the warning signs of a charity scam. Anytime you are asked to wire money right away, or we're going to send a courier over to your house or an overnight delivery service to pick up that donation, stop. It's a red flag. You're dealing with a con artist. Some charities guarantee that you'll win a sweepstakes if you make a contribution. Don't go that route either. There are some charities that do run contests in order to help raise money, but nobody can guarantee you that you will be a winner if you give money. So that's an absolute scam as well. And some places will call up and say, hey, we're just calling because remember you made that pledge and you're going to make the donation, and they try to bamboozle you and trick you into giving money. If you didn't make the pledge, you didn't make the pledge. There's no problem whatsoever with hanging up. Don't let somebody high pressure you or twist your arm and make you give a donation.
Got
and
it.
The final thing, and this is really, really important, the number two reason why I would never give money over the phone, aside from the fact that you don't know who's on the other end of the line, if it is a boiler room calling you, it is a very good bet that most of the money you were to give, if you were to make a donation, is going to go to the company making the telemarketing call and not the charity in question. Standard contracts now, according to the folks I talked to at the Federal Trade Commission, tend to be 80 to 90%. So if somebody called me up and I gave $100, $80 to $90 of my $100 donation would go to the telemarketer, not the charity.
Oh, wow.
That is really, that's why, you know, so if you have a charity you want to do, as I said before, pick your charities, research them, and then make the donation directly. You know, send them a check, go online and make a donation. But if you're doing an intermediary like a telephone call, those boiler rooms keep most of the money. And I just, again, I hate to see all that money going to them. It should be going to the charitable cause.
Well, I didn't know that. That's not good, man. Oh man. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of these calls, and you probably get them there. We get them here too. They claim to be raise money for the police, and they talk real fast. Sometimes they, you know, this is Sergeant Jones of the police for the Chicago Police Department, and you know, they make it sound to you like if you make a donation, the cops will watch your neighborhood more. That if you make a donation, it's going to help the police department. And in most cases, what they're calling for is either they're calling for the police union or a police benevolent fund or something like that. Which, if you wanted to give to that, I have no problem whatsoever. I have a problem with somebody trying to fool you, because I've talked to people who have given to this and they thought they were buying bulletproof vests or, you know, canine dogs or, you know, police. That's what your tax dollars go for. Even in Chicago, that's what your tax dollars go for.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't have to call up and raise money for that. So if you want to give to the Police Widows Fund or the Police Benevolent Fund or the union, whatever, that's fine. Your donation is probably not tax deductible. And if you ask them, is it deductible? If they're telling the truth, they'll say no if that's one of the cases. But I just get the problem where these telemarketers call up and pretend to be a cop and make promises like, you know, we'll patrol your neighborhood more because we really appreciate you doing what you're doing. Again, that's just not the way anybody should be raising money.
Okay. And by the way, this full article is up on your website, correct? Consumerman.com?
Yes, absolutely. Consumerman.com.
Okay. And tell everyone, first of all, before we jump into our next story here, tell everybody about your newsletter.
Sure, it's real simple. If you go to the website, get a little pop-up, or you can go to the right-hand corner and just sign up for the newsletter. I will send you a little email from me every week that tells you about the stories that I did on NBCNews.com and also a couple of the ones I've done on the local radio station out here. Just a great way to keep up to date on what's going on in the consumer world. I don't sell, share, lend my mailing list to anybody. It's just between you, me, and my dog who helps me do it every weekend. And and we'll send you the information, and happy to do it as a way, because, you know, we're all so busy. This is a proactive way. Instead of having to worry about going to the website, it just comes to you every week.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's at consumerman.com. All right. And again, if you guys have some questions or concerns, you can call us or text us right now. Herb would be happy to answer some questions or give you some advice. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Now, you have some advice for parents this holiday season about emotion-driven spending. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and that's especially with the kids' wish lists. And I'd love to hear from anybody who has any thoughts on what I'm about to talk here, any of your listeners. But a great concern from financial analysts and parental experts I've talked to is how the holiday season is now being run by the kids making the wish lists and then the parents feeling pressure or stress to buy everything that's on that wish list. And what got me started on this article was the T. Rowe Price 2018 Parents, Kids, and Money Survey. And they found that nearly half, 45% of the parents that they surveyed agreed with the following statement. I try to get everything on my kids' lists, no matter the cost. 45% agreed with that statement. And then they also found that those who do try to cross everything off the list are much more likely to finance their holiday spending than those who don't, and they're also more likely to have gone into debt for something their kids wanted than those who don't. So I see that as a very dangerous situation where you're busting your budget, you're doing what you probably shouldn't do in order to make your kids happy for the short term rather than looking at your long-term needs. And believe it or not, it's estimated by NerdWall, the financial website, that something like 40 million people, 40 million Americans are still paying off last year's Christmas shopping, holiday shopping stuff, which is amazing. So it shows you what kind of financial situation people put themselves in to give a whole lot of stuff at the holidays when they probably can't afford it.
Wow. That's a huge number.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, one of the things I talked about here is about the wish list. I'll share my story, and if you want to share yours, we didn't have wish lists when I was a kid.
No.
I truly believe wish lists were created by the retailers who want to make sure that you know that show Sandy your list and get the stuff, and they have all the stuff online now. When I was growing up and celebrating Hanukkah, there was no wish list. My parents, you know, found something they thought we would really, really like or really, really needed, and it was a big surprise. I had no idea what I was going to get. and it was wonderful. I remember them like it was yesterday. One of the ones was I had just watched John Wayne, The High and the Mighty. Loved that movie, and they found an airplane that had, you could start the propellers. It was a like a DC-8 or whatever that was, and then you could turn a little switch, and the lights went on, and there were people inside the windows. And I just thought technology could never get better. That was the coolest thing in the world. The next year, they gave me a tape recorder, and that led to my career where I am today, because I started pretending to be a disc jockey.
Wow.
So it was Herb Elliott, the radio disc jockey.
There you
so,
go.
And then it became where I am. But that was, you know, when I talked to some parent experts at the University of Washington, she said, you know, my family didn't have them, and it's really getting out of hand. She got married, and her husband's family did have wish lists, and she said, so what we agreed on was we had to keep it in control. And it is, okay, you can make a wish list, but Santa really prefers that people don't ask for too many things. So one, two, maybe three things. And it would be really nice if you told Santa one of those gifts you'd like to give to somebody else. So it's sort of teaching the fact that, you know, it's not all about gimme, gimme, gimme. It's also about giving to somebody else, and that it just doesn't get out of hand. And I thought that was a really great thought that I've been trying to share with a lot of people. It's also, if you don't know what you're going to get, there is, I mean, you know, I see kids get these presents now, and they sit there and they rip them open, next.
Yeah,
it's like a job.
Yeah.
And they know what the presents are. There's no excitement, and it's over. It's like, okay, what are we doing now? It's like, I don't know. I find that to be terrible.
Yeah. Well, it is. And by the way, the full article you can read again at consumerman.com for more of that. Herb, we got to take a break here. Hang on, okay?
Absolutely. Okay.
Right. Herb Weisbaum is with us. He is our consumer guy. Consumerman.com is his website. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m. Coming up after the 1:30 news, a special Friday morning appearance from Dan Feinberg to discuss the Golden Globe TV nominations. And we'll talk Golden Globe in general and the movie nominations a little bit later on. Regular Friday features are also coming up straight out of context. Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy. Fly Jams Friday, all coming up. But we also have an unfortunate Blackhawks Express that we will play back. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Herb Weisbaum is with us. Emmy Award-winning reporter covering the consumer beat for NBCNews.com joins us once a month. And let's welcome Herb back to the show. Welcome back, Herb.
Hello, Nick.
All right. We have a text that just came in, if you can help us out with this.
Sure.
773 area code texts in, I heard there was a major breach of credit cards at a major hotel chain. What is being done to make our information safer, or is that just a fact of life?
That was the Marriott, and they now own the Starwood chain, so that was through them. The last figures I heard were like 500 million files were stolen, records or something like that. The scary part is that in many cases this could include passport numbers if someone, for some reason, international traveler passport numbers were put in the computer. So it's a lot worse than just credit or debit cards and that sort of thing. Yes, this is a fact of life now. Chances are you and I and everyone listening has already been breached several times in our lives and will probably continue to be breached for the rest of our lives. And so we have to live in a world where we assume that our personal information is floating around there and act accordingly and do a number of things to protect ourselves all the time. And I can certainly, would like me to go into some of that stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Because, I mean, we really do have to have this protective attitude that we have been breached. We are going to continue to be breached. I mean, it's shocking to me that these companies are not doing more to protect our information. The reporting initially on this breach was that they were in the system for 4 years. Four years before they found out about it. I mean, that just blows my mind when I think about that. It's just amazing. So clearly, companies say they're taking this seriously, but they're not taking it seriously. They're not doing things in place to protect us. And, you know, there's always the weak link. There's always the human being. And as long as the con artists can trick and the hackers can trick somebody into doing something that somehow gets them into the system or reveals a password, and it can even sometimes be subcontractors that can get you into the systems, because if they have access, you can get a lower-level person that you work your way into the system, they're going to be able to get in. So that's just a reality. So you have to do a number of things. First of all, you should be checking your online accounts probably once a week. That's enough to just know what's going on. You'd be checking your banking account and be checking your credit card account and just be looking for anything that's not right that's in there, because the faster you deal with a problem, the faster it is that you can deal with something. So that's number one. If you haven't frozen your credit file yet, please, please do that. Make that your New Year's resolution. You need to go to the three credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. Thanks to a new law that took effect a couple of months ago, it is now absolutely free. You can do this for free, and you can unlock your account anytime you need it, unfreeze your account. So if you want to go to a department store and open up a credit account, if you want to buy a new car, if you need to get cell service and they need to do a credit check, you can go online, you can open up the file, they can do it, and then you can lock the file back again. It is the only thing you can do that proactively protects you against the identity thieves. Please lock your credit files. With all the breaches that have been going on, you should absolutely be checking your credit file. That's the history that's in the credit bureaus that your credit score is created from, and that's what it's based on. You need to get these. You get these for free. You get them once every 12 months at annualcreditreport.com. That's the only place you should do that, annualcreditreport.com. You can get all three at once to start out the new year, or you can get one now and one in 4 months from another credit bureau and one in 4 months from another credit bureau. Just find out anything that's on there that doesn't make sense. You never lived here. You don't work there. There's a collection notice that you don't know anything about. There are credit cards that you didn't open. That will give you the idea that you're a victim of identity theft, and you need to take care of it. Other things. You know those things you all get every month from our health insurance, and it says this is not a bill?
Yeah.
And it tells you, and you, what do we do? It says not a bill. You throw it away, right? It's not important.
Mm.
Read it. Look at it. Look at it, because that's telling you the insurance claims that have been put in over the last month for you. If you know, Nick, if you look at yours and you see that you just had a tonsillectomy in Florida or kidney surgery in Cleveland, and you know you didn't, that means somebody has stolen your medical identity and are pretending to be you to get medical services, which is really serious because they could change your medical file. It could change what, you know, imagine you, the medical file said that your kidneys were removed and you got taken into emergency and they think you're missing one kidney or something. That happens. So you when that thing comes, just look at it and see if there's anything on there. And the last thing is set up alerts with your bank and your bank account and your credit card company. You can do it in about 90 seconds. Just look for fraud alerts and go in there and set up the alerts that make sense for you. With my credit card, I want to know if there's a foreign transaction. I want to know if there's a non-credit card transaction, so if it's a phone or a web transaction, instantaneously I get a notification of that. My checking account, I can know anytime there's a money pulled out from an ATM machine and how much. I know anytime there's a check, I set my own limit over $250. I know that that's going to happen. This will instantaneously let you know what is going on with your checking account and your credit card accounts. It's very simple to do. You can get a text, you can get an email, you can get both. That will let you know what's going on. These are proactive things that we need to do.
I have to tell you, Herb, that my credit card company does that. Whenever there's any kind of thing, I get an email and I get a text immediately. And, you know, because sometimes, for instance, like just last week, I bought something online from a website, a reputable website, but a website that I'd never purchased anything from before. And as soon as it went through, literally my phone buzzed like 2 seconds afterwards and said, "Hey, this isn't, you know, did you or did you not just make this purchase?" And I said, "Yes."
No, that's a little different than what I'm talking about. That's the fraud. That's the fraud alerts that are built into the cards now based on the algorithms that are looking for fraud.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I'm talking about you proactively tell the card, "I want to know anytime there's a transaction." Yeah. You can even set it for a transaction of $0 just to know somebody did something. So that's above and beyond. What they're looking for on their end. This is you're telling them, here's what I want to know that's happening with my checking account or my credit card.
Right.
That's a really great way to know what's going on.
Is that free?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It takes you 90 seconds to set it up.
Okay.
Go to fraud alerts. Look for fraud alerts on your bank account and fraud alerts on your credit card. You can set that up.
Okay, great. All right. That's all of that is great tips and great advice, and I'm sure everybody is happy to hear it. I do want to mention before we got one more text coming in, but I did want to mention there's an article that you wrote that I think people should read, Herb, especially, you know, during the holiday season when people are spending. You wrote a piece about, is store credit a credit card worth it? You talk about being the rewarded, but there's also sky-high interest rates, and you go through specific stores that offer credit cards, and I think it's a really great piece that I think people should read.
Thank you. Bottom line is, it can save you money on the spot. It can also cost you an awful lot, up to 29% if you don't pay the bill off every month. And you lose more than you gain. So you got to be really, really careful about those cards. They have the highest interest rate of any credit cards.
We got a couple of texts here before we get you out of here, Herb.
Okay.
Brian sends in the text that says, talking about scams. I got a phone call saying, for making 100% on-time payment on your credit cards, please call us for a better card. Nick, I haven't had a credit card for 15 years.
That's a robocall scam, and they were hoping they'll try to get your personal information, do something good for him. I mean, he was good, but most people they call will have a credit card, and they're hoping somebody will fall for that and give them their personal information.
Yeah, so watch out for that.
Absolutely.
And Little Eddie says, I agree with the wish list thing. If they need it, they will survive.
Little Eddie, I like it.
Yeah.
I like the thought.
There you go. Herb, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. You help out so many people. I think everybody should subscribe to your newsletter at consumerman.com, and I hope everybody has a safe spending during the holidays and all that good stuff.
Thanks, Nick. For all the listeners who are still in the middle of Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah. And for you guys, Merry Christmas and a great new year, and I'll talk to you in January.
You got it. Take care, Herb.
Thanks so much.
There you go. Herb Weissbaum, everybody. He's great. He joins us once a month. Check out consumerman.com for more information. News is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, and You Big Dummy. All coming up right here on 720 WGN. And also, we're going to talk about the movie side of the Golden Globes and talk about the Golden Globes in general in a little bit. But the TV side of the Golden Globes, we are going to discuss with our friend Dan Feinberg. Normally, he's with us on Thursday mornings, but since they announced the Golden Globe nominations on Thursday morning, he was kind enough to join us on Friday so that we can discuss that. Dan Feinberg is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's bring Dan in. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good. Happy Golden Globes Day.
Yeah. I find the Golden Globes to just be frustrating and dumb sometimes.
And there went our analysis of them right there. I think that pretty much covers everything.
Well, we're going to go through the nominations. We'll go through all the TV. I'm going to do the movie nominations in a little bit. But we'll go through TV with you. Now, you wrote about it overall. Before we get to announcing the nominations, you did write about the Golden Globe TV oddities. Let's go through that first, and then we'll go through the nominations.
Sure. No. Ultimately, there was a certain amount of nitpicking I was doing. These nominations are okay. They've got some silly stuff, but as I led my piece that I wrote yesterday morning at like 5 a.m. or something, we're still attempting to parse and find deeper meaning in a random group of 91 foreign journalists who think that The Kominsky Method is a better TV show than Atlanta. And at the end of the day, there's only really so far you can dig once you start with that as your initial premise.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's really true. I mean, the fact that Atlanta didn't get nominated and that The Handmaid's Tale didn't get nominated either were both big surprises and disappointments on my end.
I think I understood to some degree, I don't know, the Handmaid's Tale thing is, okay, there were a lot, and we'll get to this when we go category by category, there were a lot of new dramas they had to make room for, and it is the Golden Globes, and they are a distracted by the shiny and new organization, and let's just say maybe some of them were disappointed by how The Handmaid's Tale season ended, or much more realistically, let's just say that Handmaid's Tale ended a few months ago, and therefore they simply forgot about it, except that at least they remembered Devon Strahovski and Elizabeth Moss, so that's something. And as for Atlanta, I can kind of accept the theory that that in a world of kind of blurring genre lines, people are finding it harder and harder to look at comedies that don't make them laugh as being as successful as comedies that do. And if, for whatever reason, Golden Globe voters felt like the reassuring Chuck Lorre rhythms of the Kominsky Method, among other things that beat Atlanta for a comedy series, was just funnier than Atlanta, it's one of those subjective things where I can't necessarily tell them that they're wrong, except that they're wrong. So that's kind of how I have to look at it. Otherwise, what you going to do?
Well, what are some of the other observations that you made about the nominations?
I find it vaguely fascinating that that the Americans finally got a drama series nomination in its sixth season, which simply doesn't happen. This is a show that Golden Globe voters have never had any interest in for whatever reason. And the two stars had been nominated 2 years ago, but then they weren't nominated last year, so it kind of looked like the show fell off the map. And then suddenly this year, both stars and series were nominated. That was a little strange. I find it positive and reassuring that The Good Place has kind of is building up a little bit of awards momentum between the Golden Globes and the Emmys. It's beginning to kind of cement its position there. So it got two nominations. That was nice. And if it hadn't gotten two nominations, the only two nominations broadcast television in its entirety would have gotten were Candace Bergen and Deborah Messing for TV shows from the 80s and 90s that are kind of still kicking around today. So that shows you how vital network television is now. If, according to the Golden Globe voters, the most award-worthy shows on broadcast television are Murphy Brown and Will and Grace in 2018, that shows that something has gone dramatically wrong in broadcast television. And I look at these nominations, and it's pretty clear that indeed broadcast television is just not in the game at all, because you can't even really look for the most part and see all that many things that were snubbed. You know, This Is Us getting no nominations is as close as it gets. And so, yes, Sterling K. Brown for sure would have been a worthy nominee, but it is qualitatively a vast wasteland on broadcast television at this point, and the broadcast networks need to decide if they care or not, and I think they've pretty much decided they don't care.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, you know, we've talked about this, you know, a lot, what's going on with the networks and what's going on with broadcast television. And you know, we've mentioned it. For me, the only really bright spot on broadcast television right now is The Good Place. That's kind of the only really outstanding piece of television that's on the networks.
It is the only thing that at this moment feels like it is competing on the same playing field as the cable stuff. So even when I, you know, want to speak about a broadcast show that I like, whether it's Superstore or several different ABC comedies, the occasional, I don't know, CBS comedy that I find amusing in fits and starts, they're not in any conversation with in terms of ambition, in terms of reach, in terms of flair, personality, you know, anything. They're just not in the same game, and it's too bad, because they are still available for everyone, and therefore they're more watched than most of the cable things that I love, but they're just not doing the same thing. And if what we're doing is talking about the best, and that's what the end of the year and awards periods are about, there's just no room for broadcast in that conversation.
Okay. Well, let's go through the nomination, shall we?
Excellent.
Okay. Actress in a TV series comedy, Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Deborah Messing for Will and Grace, Candace Bergen for Murphy Brown, Kristen Bell for The Good Place, and Alison Brie for Glow. You already talked a little bit about the Deborah Messing, Candace Bergen thing. I mean, Rachel Brosnahan, is that going to be like the Emmys? It's going to be chugging along?
It feels like it, and she also, didn't she win last year as well? I feel like Mrs. Maisel won last year in these categories as well. Yeah. So I feel as if she's probably close to a sure thing, unless we've reached the point at which Kristen Bell finally is going to win one of these, and that might be nice. I just don't necessarily see it happening. Having Candace Bergen and Deborah Messing there is so odd. odd and makes the category look so backward looking, which is not really what the Golden Globes want to be about.
And yeah.
So, you know, you try to think of where they should have gone with these votes instead. And to me, a major part of how the comedy categories end up as somewhat thin as they did is that a lot of the kind of borderline shows that I might have considered as comedies, something like a Succession or a Killing Eve, if you told me that those two shows were comedies, I would have fully accepted it.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't the direction that the networks wanted to go. And that's fine. But I definitely think that, and we're going to get to this in a minute, you know, you have Sandra Oh, but not Jodie Comer getting nominated. I think that if Killing Eve had decided to go as a comedy, it would have been totally viable, and I think both of the leading actresses get in. So,
yeah.
You know, you make choices.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Actor in a TV series comedy, Jim Carrey for Kidding, Donald Glover for Atlanta, Michael Douglas for The Kaminsky Method. What? Sacha Baron Cohen for Who is America? And Bill Hader for Barry.
The thing is, you look at that Sacha Baron Cohen nomination, and I don't hate it, even though I really disliked Who is America, because for whatever reason, this is a category that they've had trouble filling at award shows. And so that's why William H. Macy keeps being nominated in this particular category.
Right.
And so really, that's whose position he took here. It's not like he took someone else's nomination and you have to be outraged by that. You know, are there people who are on shows that we like more who didn't get nominated, who could have gotten nominated there? Well, sure, you know, someone like Zach Galifianakis for Baskets might have been a possibility. Certainly Ted Danson could have been a possibility. But what I like here is that the Globes are such a restricted look at what television encompasses, that anything that requires them to think outside of these very linear boxes that they're in, I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a show that under other circumstances would have been completely ignored, and that's in a genre that the Globes have no way of recognizing. And so Showtime decided to submit it in the comedy category. And even if I don't like the show, I like that it's a network thing. Let's see if we can figure out a way to work around the limitations of the Globes.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I kind of endorse it anyway.
That makes sense. Does it feel like it's going to be Hader's year because he's coming off the Emmy and everything?
It could. Look, obviously, the Globe voters love Kaminsky Method.
Yeah.
And so you would not want to rule out Michael Douglas. And if Jim Carrey is attempting to push Kidding, it's a big performance.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The fact that it's not my favorite part of that show doesn't mean that I don't respect it. It's an interesting category. And then, so naturally, Sacha Baron Cohen's going to win, and I'm going to go from being admiring of having him in the field to being pissed off about it. So, it's what I get.
That's it. All right. Hold on, Dan, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are analyzing the TV side of the Golden Globe nominations, which were announced yesterday morning. So Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Get back to the conversation after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Friday morning, which means all the regular Friday features will be coming up. Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D's Show Spies. And also coming up is are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, the Golden Globe nominations were announced. We're going to tackle the movie side and talk a little bit in general about the history of the Golden Globes in a little while. But Dan Feinberg is with us, and he's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us once a month, usually on Thursdays, but he's joining us on a Friday because we're discussing the Golden Globe nominations on the TV side. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. And let's welcome back Dan Feinberg. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, let's get to the TV series comedy. The nominees are Kidding, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Barry, The Good Place, and The Kaminsky Method. What are your thoughts here, besides, obviously, Kaminsky Method taking the spot that Atlanta should have had?
Yeah, and that's really where my thoughts are, because if it's Barry, Good Place, Kidding,
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in Atlanta, you walk away feeling like that was a pretty good lift.
Yeah.
And the fact that Kaminsky Method breaks in there, that just causes me to start listing all the various shows that I might have wanted to put there instead, when really and truly there's basically one show I want to put there. And so any long list that I might give you that included, I don't know, One Day at a Time, Dear White People, Thinking Outside the Box and Going with BoJack Horseman, you know, all of those other things, really and truly, there's one show that belongs there. And if it had just been replaced for Kaminsky Method, you'd just go, okay, that's a pretty good list.
Yeah. And what does it look like here? Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I would imagine, correct?
It feels probably like what it's going to be, unless, again, the idea of Kaminsky Method winning is a little bit disturbing to me, but what can you do? And maybe they do, in fact, love Barry more than the Emmy voters did, and the Emmy voters liked it a fair amount, but maybe they really love it, and maybe Barry's going to win everything for them. So, I don't know. But Marvelous Mrs. Maisel feels probably right.
Supporting actor in a TV series, limited series, or TV movie. Again, the supporting actor stuff where they just kind of throw everything in. Edgar Ramirez for The Assassination of Gianni Versace. I love this nomination. Kieran Culkin for Succession. Because I love him in that show, and I love that show, but I particularly think he was great. And it's nice that he got, you know, he stood out there. Alan Arkin,
keep going down the list, huh?
Alan Arkin, The Kaminsky Method, Henry Winkler for Barry, Ben Whishaw for A Very English Scandal. Okay.
The thing that upsets me here is that once you include Kieran Culkin in this category, it makes it clear to you know that Succession exists.
Right.
And then I get annoyed you didn't nominate Succession in other categories.
Right, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's where my problem comes here, because did he deserve the nomination? Yes, probably. Whether or not he would be the supporting actor in the show I would give the nomination to, maybe, maybe not, maybe Matthew McFadden instead. But still, once it's clear that you know the show, then I start getting annoyed that it didn't get a series nomination and all that.
Right.
It's a reasonably good category, honestly. And, you know, the part of Kaminsky Method that I don't quibble with at all is Alan Arkin. I think he's really great. Ben Whishaw is fantastic in A Very English Scandal. He's basically a co-lead, possibly plausibly the lead. And, you know, to me, if I had a vote, it really would be for Ben Whishaw in this category.
Okay.
And it would not surprise me at all if he were the winner. So, because he simply has the biggest and most substantive part of anyone in this category.
I've not seen A Very English Scandal, so...
It's fantastic. You should watch it. People should watch it.
Okay, great. Okay. All right. It looks like, but I mean, come on, Henry Winkler, maybe. I mean, because everybody loves him, and he won the Emmy.
Oh, sure. It would not surprise me at all if he won. It's a pretty good field, given the general stupidity of the catch-all supporting categories, in which somehow every type of TV is boiled down to five supporting performances. These are five good supporting performances.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would include Edgar Ramirez, but I understand why he's here. But you know, this isn't bad. As for what the Golden Globes generally do in these categories, this is close to doing it right.
Okay. Supporting actress in a TV series, limited series, or TV movie, Patricia Clarkson for Sharp Objects, Penelope Cruz for The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Tandy Newton for Westworld, Alex Borstein for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Yvonne Strahovski for The Handmaid's Tale. So that's another good category.
Yeah, but they're fairly reasonable, and really and truly, these are categories in which every year there is some ridiculous stand out like a sore thumb, like Christian Slater popping up here possibly multiple times for Mr. Robot, where you just go, what?
Yeah.
And there's no performance here that makes me do that. Von Strahovski was great on Handmaid's Tale this year. Penelope Cruz is great in Assassination of Johnny Versace. Patricia Clarkson's great. Alex Borstein's great. Tandy Newton is very, very good, unquestionably. You sort of notice the lack of love for Westworld here,
yeah.
And that she still snuck in anyway is something. But, you know, in a perfect world, might I add, like, a Sarah Snook for Succession here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then probably I could come up with a dozen other great supporting performances. Not a bad group. And whoever wins from this category is reasonably deserving. I would guess either Patricia Clarkson or Penelope Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
We'll see.
Actress in a TV movie or limited series, Amy Adams for Sharp Objects, Laura Dern for The Tale, Patricia Arquette for Escape at Dannemora, Connie Britton for Dirty John, and Regina King for 7 Seconds. I've not seen Dirty John, but I really like Patricia Arquette, Laura Dern, and Amy Adams.
And I assume the winner will come down to one of the three of them, and probably to Amy Adams or Patricia Clarkson. And I think Amy Adams will be difficult to beat, but Patricia Clarkson has a really, really showy performance in Escape at Dannemora.
Patricia Arquette, you said Clarkson.
Yeah.
Arquette.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Two different people.
Yeah.
I think she does have the right kind of part.
Yeah,
but I don't know that the Globes are the group that's going to value a character actor showy performance over a leading lady.
Right.
Performance.
Yeah, and I think right there, in some regards, you summed up the Golden Globes, right?
Absolutely. I think if we were having a more complicated conversation, I think they're both great performances, and right. I don't think there's a bad winner there between the two of them.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, a special Friday morning appearance because the Golden Globe nominations came out on Thursday morning, and we're going category by category, and we'll talk more with Dan about that after we take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, high above downtown Chicago here on a Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your Fly Jam requests. DJ Shagru will get them ready. And we're going to be talking in general. We're right now, though, with Dan Feinberg, we're covering the TV side of the Golden Globe nominations. I'll cover the movie side and just talk about the Golden Globes in general coming up a little bit later on. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's get back to the conversation. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, best actor in a TV movie or limited series, Benedict Cumberbatch for Patrick Melrose, Darren Criss for The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Antonio Banderas for Genius Picasso, Daniel Brühl for The Alienist, and Hugh Grant for A Very English Scandal. So where are we going on? I mean, obviously, you know, I know you're bristling over the fact that Antonio Banderas got nominated again.
It's just one of those things, and he's movie star Antonio Banderas. He was going to be nominated. I am not angry about it. I've made my peace. I think Darren Criss is probably still the favorite, but Benedict Cumberbatch and Hugh Grant are both going to be very tough competitors and tougher. I think Benedict Cumberbatch will be tougher here than he was at the Emmys. And again, people should watch A Very English Scandal. It is a great 3 hours, and the lead actors are both fantastic, and Hugh Grant is super. And if Hugh Grant couldn't get a nomination for Paddington 2, at least he got this nomination.
All right. I will definitely watch it. It wasn't really on my radar. But I will say this. I think Benedict Cumberbatch does the best work of his career in Patrick Melrose. I just think it's the best thing he's ever done. I think he's great on it.
And I'm inclined to agree. I just think that probably, as with the Emmys as well, Assassination of Gianni Versace is just going to be very, very hard to beat across the board.
All right. Limited series, that show you just mentioned, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Sharp Objects, Escape at Dannemora, A Very English Scandal, and The Alienist. And that's probably going to go to The Assassination of Gianni Versace, correct?
It probably will, unless HBO is just making a really good push on Sharp Objects. And I think that's where the competition is. And I think that Sharp Objects is more competition for Assassination of Gianni Versace than anything was at the Emmys. Mm. So at least there is more interest here. But I think Gianni Versace probably wins. But the fun thing about the Globes, though, is when you get these entries that haven't competed in another award shows, and then you go, okay, well, maybe there is a lot of love for Sharp Objects, and I just didn't realize it. Sharp Objects was a limited series that I feel like people were talking about and loving at the beginning, and then maybe fizzled out a tiny bit at the end in terms of enthusiasm, and I think that may have hurt it. Mm. I liked the end, but I understand that some people did not, and I think that might be all it takes to kind of drop it back here below.
I thought it was great, actually. I mean, I love Sharp Objects. I thought it was really, really great. I thought everybody in it was terrific. So, all right, TV actor or actress in a TV series drama, Katrina Balfe for Outlander, Julia Roberts for Homecoming, Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale, Sandra Oh for Killing Eve, and Carrie Russell for The Americans.
Just a good category. Probably Julia Roberts wins it because it's the Golden Globe.
Seems
likely, though. You do have Sandra Oh co-hosting the show,
right?
So that would be a nice moment were she to win, and it would not be in any way an undeserving win. So I think, as we've discussed in Emmys and past seasons, the actress drama category is really and truly just where it's at these days, and so you keep getting these fields that are just wonderful and very gratifying to see. And so, if Julia Roberts wins, that's fine. She would not be my top choice in the category. Probably Sandra Oh, Elizabeth Moss, or Carrie Russell would all be my pick over her.
Yeah.
But it's the Golden Globes.
Exactly. All right. Actor in a TV series drama, Stephen James for Homecoming, Matthew Rhys for The Americans, Jason Bateman for Ozark, Billy Porter for Pose, and Richard Madden for Bodyguard. Where do you go with this?
Oh, it's interesting. Jason Bateman doesn't belong there. That's easy. And one of my frustrations that we didn't get to earlier is Bob Odenkirk not being nominated for Better Call Saul. That to me is just ridiculous. Stephen James to me just doesn't have as much to do as a lot of these other actors. That's the problem with a half hour drama. We love how fast those episodes go by,
right?
But if it's really a true ensemble and there are only 10 episodes, it's kind of a thin part. Either Matthew Rhys is going to win here or else The Americans is never going to get recognition. But I think my preference would probably be Billy Porter, who's just wonderful in Pose. I think he may really and truly be more of a supporting actor in the series, but he's so good and is so deserving of recognition for how good he is that I'd probably take it wherever it could come from. But okay. If Richard Madden wins, it makes it more likely he gets to be James Bond, so there's that.
Okay. All right, then the last category here, TV series drama. Homecoming, Killing Eve, Pose, The Americans, Bodyguard. Where are you going with that?
I think we're going to have to see how much love there really is for Homecoming, because I think it's possible there could be a lot of love for Homecoming. I don't see Bodyguard winning. So at that point, probably, I guess Homecoming probably is my pick. And Amazon has won for a lot of odd things in the past. They won for Transparent. They won for Mozart in the Jungle. They won for Mrs. Maisel last year. So I would guess that this is going to be a Homecoming victory.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. As you mentioned, Sandra Oh is co-hosting with Andy Samberg. What do you think of that?
I think it's an idea, and I think it's a decent idea. I think they were one of the good parts of a very bad Emmy telecast in the fall, but they really had a nice, cute dynamic. I think we know that Andy Samberg is utterly capable of hosting solo. So what Sandra Oh's presence does is it changes the energy and it changes the dynamic. And I think I like that as an idea. It will have no impact whatsoever on the show's ratings. If anything, it probably will turn some people off because some people are dumb. But yeah, no, I think it's fine. I think it's worth the effort. It happens that hosts of the Golden Globes, for whatever reason, do better than hosts of other shows. Seth Meyers did well last year.
Yeah.
Some people love Ricky Gervais.
I am one of those people. I am one of those people.
And there are plenty of people who love the Tina and Amy combination when they did it. So there's actually a track record of various people doing well as Golden Globes host, which is odd because for many, many, many years, this was a show that went hostless.
Yeah.
So there's no real reason why it should be that they do better with the hosts on this show than in some others. But yeah, I'm okay with it. Are you okay?
Oh,
with
yeah.
The pairing?
I am. I think it's an interesting pairing, and I think they're going to do well, you know, and I thought it was a good idea. You know, and it like you said, it's a great idea, and I think they'll pull it off. I think it's going to be an entertaining show. So, all right.
I think it requires writing, and that's always a risk, is that if you have Tina and Amy, it really, yes, it requires writing, but in the moment, they can save something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We'll see if Sandra Oh, how quick she is. I think we all know she's totally capable of being funny. Just in the moment, on the fly, can she save a dying bit? Can she save a dying show?
Right.
We'll have to see.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we'll be back to talk TV in general. We covered the Golden Globes. Now we'll just jump into some stuff that Dan's been writing about for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, and we'll get back to the conversation after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Dan Feinberg is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to talk some general TV stuff since we covered the Golden Globes TV side. Let's get back with Dan. Dan, welcome back. Okay, you know, we obviously talked a little bit about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel because it gets, you know, nominated for everything. Season 2, how do you feel about it?
I have watched the first 5 episodes of it, and I will definitely be watching the last 5 this weekend, and I enjoyed it. I think there are some questionable narrative decisions, but a lot of it depends on which characters you happen to be interested in or not interested in. I, for example, do not care about Midge Maisel's husband or ex-husband or what estranged husband Joel. The show does care about him and spends more time with him than I'm frankly interested in. I love the actors who play all of the parents, but I don't necessarily care all that much about what's happening with several of them and their various storylines. I care about the main core storyline. I care about watching Rachel Brosnahan and Alex Borstein, and just hearing both of those actresses deliver Amy Sherman-Palladino's dialogue, and that to me is what the show does best, and it's in fine form in the early episodes. So the first 5 episodes, 3 are written and directed by Amy Sherman-Palladino, 1 by her husband Daniel Palladino, and 1 by Daniel co-wrote and someone else directed it, and the one that had the least connection to them is the worst of the group. And that's, at this point, predictable. I think anyone who watched Gilmore Girls or Bunheads knows that you can tell the difference between the episodes.
Yes, you can.
You can hear.
Absolutely, you can.
That's how it goes.
Yep. No question about it.
So, yeah.
All right.
I'm looking forward to watching more of it this weekend. It is, to me, such a pleasurable and pleasant show, and I hope it will be rainy and cold in Los Angeles this weekend, and I can just bundle up and watch 5 episodes of that.
There you go. All right. That sounds like a good one. All right. I'm really interested in Night Flyers. They've been advertising the heck out of it. Tell everybody about Night Flyers.
It is the part of how they're advertising it is it's from a novella by George R. R. Martin, and so everyone goes, ooh, Game of Thrones. But George R. R. Martin, of course, spent decades as a wildly prolific kind of jack-of-all-trades writer, and this is a novella from a career where he, part of his career where he was writing stories, novellas, sci-fi, fantasy, everything, throw it against the wall. And I don't know that if you didn't know his background, you would ever look and go, oh, this is the guy from Game of Thrones. Clearly, I see all of the trademarks, because it's basically, it's a sci-fi spaceship as haunted house sci-fi. That's all it is. It's fairly generic. It's the passenger. It's the crew of a vessel flying into deep space to hopefully make first contact with an alien species. And things begin to get spooky inside the spaceship. And some of it has to do with a powerful psychic that they brought on the ship, but maybe some of it has to do with something haunted or spooky within the ship. And occasionally it works. The cast is okay. Some people will recognize Yoan Macken from NBC's summer fill-in show Night Shift. People will recognize Gretchen Mol. There are some decent supporting actors. There's just nothing specific and distinctive enough about it to make it really stand out. But on the other hand, if you like hard sci-fi and you just have been craving a TV show on a spaceship, which many people have, I understand it, and it's definitely not corny. It takes the genre seriously. It takes the material seriously. Just in an average episode of 45 minutes, there are probably 5 or 10 minutes that are something slightly different from anything you've seen before. But mostly, you're watching it going, "Okay, I know the genre. I know the rules. I know all of the scary, dark, metallic hallways where people can start hearing voices of loved ones, because on every space show, half of the characters have to have been people whose children died back on Earth who are still haunted by that. So you're going to hear little children's voices in the hallways of the scary spaceship, and that's just what it is. And if you don't have a jonesing for that, definitely the show isn't going to have anything for you. But I think that if you don't have a spaceship show right now, there it is.
Okay. All right. I was intrigued by it. But yeah. Okay. And I like space.
I don't know. Yeah. If this is the kind of thing where you enjoy sitting down and you know, watching the different people in the uniforms and seeing how they're going to treat the spaceship, you know, how much they're going to be able to show of the special effects, because this is a show where in the first episode or two, you see tons of this vast spaceship. You see its architecture, you see all of the intricate details. And then probably by the middle, I've seen 5 episodes, there just clearly isn't budget for that. And so basically they're in rooms with metallic grating and stuff. It could be anywhere. And
yeah.
So you're like, okay, there's just not the budget for
right.
what it wants to be.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's Night Flyers. Okay, Dan, always a pleasure. It was fun talking Golden Globes with you. And obviously when they hand out the statues, we'll talk about it afterwards. And we'll talk to you again next month.
Excellent. Looking forward to it, Nick.
Okay. All right, Dan. Hey, have a good Hanukkah, okay?
Thank you much. You too.
Okay, take care. See you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., and it's Friday morning. That means all the regular features, Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And also, Straight Out of Context, you know what that is. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We also have Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this station 24/7. Whenever I'm mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot all the information down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. You Big Dummy, that's when we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on them. And actually, the first person through after we do the recap, after we read the articles, will be the third vote on who the biggest dummy of the week is. And that's at 312-981-720. And you could read, you can be a part of this segment as well. Find a link to a funny, dumb news story of a dumb person doing something dumb. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com and say, hey, I'd like to read this on the air. Dan will get a hold of you. We'll work it out. You'll be on the radio with us reading a story on You Big Dummy. And on top of that, you get some Lou Malnati's pizza. And so it's a win-win-win situation. So those are all the regular features for Friday morning, and they're all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're going to talk about the Golden Globes. We talked with Dan Feinberg about the TV side of the Golden Globes, and I'm going to cover the movie side here and then talk about the Golden Globes in general. If you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, if you have any Golden Globe sort of memories or any of that stuff, or what do you think of the Golden Globes, and what do you think of some of the nominees here, 312-981-7200. So, you know, as Dan and I were discussing before, you know, the Golden Globes are kind of stupid. It's just the foreign press, and there's about like 90 people who vote on this, and a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is who would it be cool to have in the room with us? They don't necessarily deserve the nomination, but it'll be awesome if Brad Pitt's in the audience. So let's nominate Brad Pitt, and he's not going to get nominated for anything else. I'm just using Brad Pitt as an example. But like, you remember the movie The Tourist? Nobody really does. It was Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. And it got like a slew of nominations because simply the Hollywood Foreign Press wanted Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie there. I mean, because nobody, you know, I mean, Ricky Gervais made fun of it, made fun of the movie that night and the fact that it got nominated. And they've done it again this year. I mean, they've nominated some stuff that's absolutely absurd. And, you know, I guess it's a long shot now for Toni Collette to even get nominated for Hereditary. And I just find that an absolute shame. I know we've talked about this before. Hereditary is a horror movie. And it's a straight up horror movie, and it gets real weird during the last 15 minutes. I mean, the last 15 minutes of Hereditary is insane. It's completely insane. So I can understand that it's not sort of, you know, the kind of thing that would normally be, you know, an awards season nominee. But she's so good in it. I mean, even people who think, you know, Hereditary is weird and it shouldn't be considered, you know, a serious awards film, you have to acknowledge how good Toni Collette is in it. But she's, and now I'm thinking she might not even get nominated for an Oscar, which is just a shame, a real shame. But anyway, here are the nominees again in the motion picture category for the Golden Globe. When are the Golden Globes, Dan? Do we know? We talked about the hosts. The hosts are Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg, which is going to be a fun combination. I think they're going to do a good job. I'm looking forward to it. But and it'll be on NBC because it's always on NBC.
Sunday, January 6th.
Okay, Sunday, January 6th. Oh, God, it's less than a month. That's less than a month away. You know, Dan, that's going to be that next morning when we come back. That's going to be when we do the year end thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
With the guys. So we can maybe combine. Well, you know, the year end thing usually takes up the whole show, but we can kind of get the guys' thoughts on the nominee or on the winners that morning. So that'll be something we can do. So, as you know, they split it between comedy and drama. And I just want to read the first thing I don't want to do before we get into the nominations is Judd Apatow was talking about this in 2016. This is Judd Apatow, and the headline here reads, I wanted to pull this out because it's a constant source of comedy, no pun intended, but it's always a bristling point with the Golden Globes splitting the drama and the comedy up. And so Judd Apatow says he also thinks the Golden Globes comedy category is stupid. Let's be real. Is The Martian really even a comedy? Somebody had to say something. On Sunday night, while Judd Apatow was presenting Amy Schumer with the MVP award at the 2016 Critics' Choice Awards, he made sure to jab the Golden Globes for its oft-ridiculous film categorizations. Naturally, he did so with a hilarious and profane speech during which he specifically called out a smiling Matt Damon, who took it all very well. He said, "I got Matt Damon staring at me right now after that whole Golden Globes comedy thing. We have only one award, Matt. That's all we get. I'm like the nerd on the schoolyard, and you just stole my milk money. I mean, can we just pick whatever category we want to be in? We have an Asian man in our movie, so now it's a foreign film," he added. The comedian and train wreck director also took a shot at dramas in general, saying, "I don't mean to be weird about it, but all the dramas out there, go blank yourself." So that's Judd Apatow. And, you know, it's often been a stretch when the Golden Globes put certain movies under comedy. But when they put The Martian under comedy, you know, comedy or musical, it's comedy musical, you know, and The Martian is neither, you know, The Martian is neither. That was the most blatant display of idiocy because the Martian is a science fiction drama. That's what it is. There are some funny things in it, but it is not a comedy. And so, but in order to get Matt Damon to be there, in order to, you know, to get more awards and more star power, they'll just throw something into a comedy category, comedy or musical. Like, for instance, Baby Driver. Okay, Baby Driver was put under the category of comedy musical. Now, you could argue that it possibly is a musical. Possibly, but it's really not. It's just, Edgar Wright has a brilliant use of music and songs in it, but it's not a musical. It's not a musical, and it's certainly not a comedy, Baby Driver. So, again, this is one of the reasons why the Golden Globes are considered stupid, for so many reasons. I mean, it's a fun show to watch, and award season, I love award season. I don't care. I know it's a bunch of rich people in a room patting each other on the back for being rich. I know that. I understand that. But I like watching it. I like the red carpet stuff. I don't care. I'm shameless about that kind of stuff. I think it's very entertaining. So, it kicks off with the Golden Globes. So, here are the motion picture nominations in both the comedy and drama categories. Actor in a motion picture comedy, Christian Bale in Vice. Viggo Mortensen in Green Book. Again, I don't think Green Book is a comedy. I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff in it, but I don't think it's a comedy. I think Green Book is a drama, you know, about race relations and about the relationship between two guys. It also happens to have some funny stuff in it, some very, very funny stuff in it, but I would not categorize it as a comedy. But if that's the way that Viggo Mortensen gets a nomination, I guess that's fine. Lin-Manuel Miranda for Mary Poppins Returns. Robert Redford for The Old Man and the Gun. Again, not a comedy. I don't think it's a comedy. I don't think The Old Man and the Gun is a comedy. There are funny things in it, but I don't think it's a comedy. And then John C. Reilly for Stan and Ollie. Also, just because it's about Laurel and Hardy, I've seen the movie, okay? I've seen it. And John C. Reilly's good in it, and so is Steve Coogan. Both performances are great. I didn't think the movie was good. I thought it was, like Bohemian Rhapsody, pretty historically inaccurate. And very simplistic. And so I wasn't a fan of the movie, but I like both performances. But I don't think that's a comedy. Just because it's about Laurel and Hardy, and they did comedy movies, this isn't necessarily, this is a biopic. So, but I guess that, you know, it can fall under comedy because there are funny things in it. So there you go. Those are your nominations. Christian Bale in Vice. I hated Vice. This is the movie about Dick Cheney that Adam McKay, one of the most disappointing movies of the year for me because I love Adam McKay. I've loved him ever since SNL. And, there were things about The Big Short that annoyed me. I liked it. I recommended The Big Short. There's great stuff in that movie, but there were things about it that annoyed me, and all the things that annoyed me in The Big Short, he does times 1,000 in Vice. It's a really annoying movie. And Christian Bale, he gained a lot of weight. You know, they put some makeup on him. It's a fine performance. I wouldn't give him a nomination. It's a fine performance. So Viggo Mortensen is great in Green Book. I have not seen Mary Poppins Returns yet. Robert Redford is terrific in The Old Man and the Gun. And it's a great performance, and it might be his last performance. So there's a chance, you know, that they're going to award Robert Redford. I don't think he's never won an acting Academy Award. I don't think he's ever won an acting Academy. Maybe he has, and I don't remember it. But he won for director. He's won a Best Director Award. He won for Ordinary People. He won Best Director for that. But I don't think he's ever won an acting award.
Correct. Only nominated once for The Sting.
He was nominated for The Sting. He didn't win, and he won for Director of Ordinary People. This one could, you know, gain some. This one could really gain some gas. You know what I mean? Like, it really could. This really could steamroll if they do this right. If they advertise it right. If they get the campaign going for Robert Redford, because he's gone on record as saying this might be his last movie. And the guy's been in the business forever and has done so much as a filmmaker, and, you know, the Sundance Institute and the film festival and all that stuff. He's made a major impact in the world of film, and he's also a really good actor. So, you know, if they handle the campaign right, there's a chance Robert Redford might sneak in there and get it. I mean, I think he's going to be nominated. I think he's going to be nominated for an Academy Award. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. Nobody saw the movie. The problem is nobody saw the movie. That's the main problem, is that the studio really blew it on the releasing of the movie. It's a really good movie, too. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could they really, if they get behind it, the studio gets behind it, they could get a pretty successful campaign for Robert Redford. But in this category, you know, Viggo Mortensen to me is the best performance out of the five, or five, yeah. Because here's another thing about the Golden Globe. Sometimes there are six nominees, sometimes there are five. I don't know. Actress in a motion picture for musical or comedy: Olivia Colman for The Favorite. Okay, the Favorite is a comedy. It's a black comedy, and she's amazing in it. And I love The Favorite. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. Hold on a minute now.
All right.
I also love the fact that it's defiantly spelled with the British U. Emily Blunt for Mary Poppins Returns. I hear she's great in it. I hear she's really, really terrific in it. Constance Wu for Crazy Rich Asians, which had a big showing here at the Globes. You know, and Charlize Theron for Tully. Again, not sure Tully's a comedy. I mean, there are funny things in it. She's great in it, by the way. And that movie will be ignored by the Academy. It's a shame, too, because she gives one of the best performances of the year. And then this is a lovely surprise: Elsie Fisher for Eighth Grade. And if this continues, she might get nominated for an Academy Award. She's so good in that movie. She's just a kid, too. You know, she was in Eighth Grade when they made the movie. She's like 14 now, I think. She's 14 now. And she's so good in the movie, and it's such a good movie. Eighth Grade is a great movie. I would love to see her get nominated. That would be great. But out of this group, having not seen Mary Poppins Returns, Olivia Colman is my choice from The Favorite. She's spectacular. All the performances are spectacular in that movie. All right, well, more with the dumb Golden Globe nominations, and then we'll get into like some of the... I have this. I love this. The 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time. So we'll go through that. Golden Globes are dumb, but they're fun. So we'll get back to that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday. Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show, Spies, and You Big Dummy, all coming up a little bit later on. We're talking about the Golden Globes. We're doing the movie side of the Golden Globes. If you have any comments or questions, you have thoughts about the nominees or past Golden Globe stuff, phone lines and text lines are open. We'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 o'clock with the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to the nominations here. These are the motion picture categories. Actor in a motion picture drama: Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's Gate, John David Washington for BlacKkKlansman, and Lucas Hedges for Boy Erased. So in this one, you know... I have not seen At Eternity's Gate yet. That's one of the screeners that I will be watching over the weekend. But I do love Willem Dafoe. Bradley Cooper and Rami Malek, those guys are a lock for the Academy Award nominations. I was just happy to see John David Washington from Black Klansman get nominated. One of the things I liked, one of the few things that I like about these nominations in the Golden Globes is how Black Klansman really stood up, and I hopefully that'll get some buzz for the Oscars as well. John David Washington's terrific in Black Klansman. Lucas Hedges was good in Boy Erased, but the movie's not good. Like really not good. Cooper's great in A Star Is Born. Rami Malek did what he could in Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, the movie sucked, but I mean, he did come to play. He's the best part of the movie. There's no question about it. Like, unfortunately, it's a terrible movie. So, of the performances, personally, I like John David Washington in Black Klansman the best. I think it's the best performance here. So I don't know what's going on with the Oscars here, because I think the possibility that Viggo Mortensen will be nominated for Green Book is pretty strong, and there's a possibility that Christian Bale might even be nominated for Vice. So that would knock maybe Willem Dafoe out and John David Washington out of the race as well. So, but yeah, I don't know. Bradley Cooper is probably the favorite. That would be my guess. Actress in a motion picture drama, Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born. Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me? Glenn Close for The Wife. Rosamund Pike for A Private War, and Nicole Kidman for Destroyer. This category is, these are maybe except for Rosamund Pike, these are all strong possibilities for Oscar nominations. I think Lady Gaga and Nicole Kidman are locks for sure. And I think Melissa McCarthy is pretty good too. So that leaves like two slots open. Maybe Olivia Colman, which would be nice, or Emily Blunt. But out of the five performances here, my favorite performance is Nicole Kidman. Destroyer is whoa. I mean, that's a wow, that movie. And she's great in it. But it's that movie is, that'll get under your skin, man. I watched it like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just like, huh? I mean, but she's great in it. It's the best performance. But I don't know, man. I got a feeling that everything is going to go Lady Gaga's way. The buzz on that movie from the beginning of the you know, when everybody was talking about the movie, when it came out, it had such an enormous success at the box office, and she got stellar reviews, and she's terrific in the movie. And I really think she's just gonna battle in, and I think she's gonna win the Oscar. I predict that Lady Gaga will win the Academy Award for A Star Is Born. There have been better performances, but I just think it's inevitable that she's gonna get it. So, and she's great in it. So, actor in a supporting role in a motion picture. And again, here's what they do in the supporting. This is how stupid the Golden Globes are. In the supporting performance category, they put comedy with drama. So they just, the whole drama comedy thing is thrown out the window for the supporting performances. They do the same thing in the TV. So, actor in a supporting role in a motion picture, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me? He's great. He's great in everything. Richard E. Grant is great. They should just give him an Academy Award every year just because he lives. Mahershala Ali for Green Book, fantastic performance. Timothy Chalamet for Beautiful Boy, again, a great performance. Sam Rockwell for Vice, best thing in the movie is Sam Rockwell. He plays George W. Bush, and he's really good in it. He's not in it a ton, though. You know, I mean, it's such a good performance. You know, he's in it very, not in it a ton. I think he's in like four scenes, perhaps. But he's so good in it, and so clearly the best thing in the movie, that's probably why he's going to get recognition. And he's Sam Rockwell, you know. Won the Academy Award last year. And then Adam Driver for Black Klansman. This category is great. This is a great category. All five performances are really, really good. But I got to go with Mahershala Ali for Green Book. That's my choice. I mean, it's a great... him and Viggo Mortensen, I mean, those two performances are two of my very favorite performances of the year. Two of the best male performances of the year. And then the favorite, three of the best female performances of the year. In that movie. So, but, yeah, I don't know. And then Timothy Chalamet is fantastic in Beautiful Boy. And maybe they'll give it to him because he didn't get it last year. He was so great in Call Me By Your Name, but he didn't get it last year, so maybe they'll go his way. You know, Mahershala Ali has already got an Oscar. And I think he won the Golden Globe the year that Moonlight came out. I'm pretty sure he swept every single award that you could possibly get in the supporting category when Moonlight was during award season. And Richard E. Grant is just, he's so good in Can You Ever Forgive Me? And it's the best part Richard E. Grant has had in a long time. And I think it's a movie that first of all, it's a really good film. Both he and Melissa McCarthy are terrific in it. But I think it's a movie that's going to remind people just how damn good Richard E. Grant is. Like, how great an actor he is and has been. And he's been in the business for a long, long time. So I like him. But Mahershala Ali is my choice for supporting actor. That's a great category, though. All five performances are really strong. Okay, why don't we take a break? We got the news coming up next, and then we'll jump right back into the rest of the movie nominations from the Golden Globes. Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies and You Big Dummy. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. And we're talking about the Golden Globes. We talked about the TV nominations with Dan Feinberg, and now I'm breaking down the motion picture nominations in both the comedy and drama categories. And then we're also going to talk about how dumb the Golden Globes are at times and the 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time. If you have any Golden Globe thoughts, if you have any thoughts about the nominees this year or any of the past stuff from the Golden Globes, our phone line and text lines are open. We would love for you to jump in. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, let's pick up with actress in a supporting role in a motion picture. Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone for The Favorite, Rachel Weisz for The Favorite, Amy Adams for Vice, and Claire Foy for First Man. Amy Adams is fine in Vice. Again, I hated the movie, so I would not vote for Amy Adams. But people, you know, she's in awards now. She's a darling now, and deservedly so, because she's great. Regina King is the best part of If Beale Street Could Talk. I guess I'm not really a big fan of Barry Jenkins. Because I wasn't crazy about Moonlight. Everybody went nuts over Moonlight. They're all going nuts over If Beale Street Could Talk. I guess I'm just not. His style doesn't hit me like it hits everybody else. But Regina King is great in the movie. Let me just say she's really great in it. And of course, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz from The Favorite. I don't even know who I could pick out of those two. And Olivia Colman. All three of them, really. And Claire Foy, please. Please. And she's great in First Man, which is a movie that's, of course, getting ignored, which is really unfortunate because it's a great movie and nobody went to see it. But it's nice to see Claire Foy get the nomination because I love Claire Foy. I just think she's amazing. And when she was on Jimmy Fallon, you know, before she hosted SNL, she was on last week on Fallon, you know, because they're in the same building. So she made an appearance. She knows all the words to Rapper's Delight, and she performed most of it. They gave her a mic, and it was great. It was Claire Foy doing Rapper's Delight. That was outstanding. All right, best song, All the Stars from Black Panther. Who does that? Because it doesn't have the artist here.
I believe Kendrick Lamar did the soundtrack, so it might be him.
Yeah, it's probably Kendrick Lamar, yeah. Girl in the Movies from Dumplin'. You know that Dumplin' is this Netflix movie that is available now. Well, it's based on a true story about the beauty pageant, the teenage beauty pageants, and Jennifer Aniston plays the overbearing mother who was once a beauty pageant winner herself, trying to get her daughter to get in there. And they wouldn't have made the movie without Dolly Parton because she was inspired so much by Dolly Parton. So Dolly Parton said yes immediately and wrote six original songs for the movie. So they picked one of them from Dumplin', and I would imagine she's going to get an Oscar nomination too. I mean, six original songs, and Dolly Parton. Why would you not want to have Dolly Parton on the Oscars to perform? Requiem for a Private War from A Private Roar, Revelation from Boy Erased, and Shallow from A Star Is Born. Now, there could be like three or four songs from A Star Is Born that they could pick, but they picked Shallow. Best score, Marco Beltrami for A Quiet Place. Terrific, terrific score. Alexandra Desplat for Isle of Dogs. Ludwig Göransson from Black Panther. Great score. That was a really good score. Mark Shaiman for Mary Poppins Returns, and Justin Hurwitz for First Man, which is also one of the best scores of the year. So I'm not seeing Mary Poppins Returns, but Mark Shaiman, you know, has written music and lyrics and stuff forever. He will always, you know, get a pass in my book because he wrote, you know, a ton of the music for South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut. So right there, he gets it, you know. Animated feature, The Incredibles 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. By the way, Dan, that movie is getting incredible buzz.
Oh, good.
Eric, Colin, everybody, you know, they I mean, seriously, loving it. And I didn't, you know, when I first saw the trailer for it, I was like, what is this? And I still thought it was weird. But now, I'm really looking forward to it now because, like, you know, somebody did a Brian Tallarico, our good friend Brian Tallarico. He did a ranking of the Marvel movies. He, you know, because he's on Letterboxd, that website where you can rank stuff. And he did a ranking, and he put this movie fourth.
Wow.
In all of the Marvel movies, he put it fourth. And, I mean, so this is a movie that kind of, I guess, is coming out of, you know, I mean, for me, it came out of nowhere. I was like, what is this thing? But the guys behind it who wrote it did the Lego movie. So right there, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's really... It's got the buzz for it is massive. It opens next week. It opens a week from today. So now I'm looking forward to it. At first I was like, eh, whatever. But now, like, everybody is loving it, you know. So, and I know how much you enjoy Spider-Man. This might be kind of a fun movie for you to check out. I mean, obviously when it comes out on video.
Yeah, probably.
Isle of Dogs, which is Wes Anderson's movie, and Mirai. Those are your nominations there. Out of these, I haven't seen the Spider-Man. Isle of Dogs is my favorite out of those. Foreign language film, Capernaum, Roma. Oh, and by the way, Roma is an extraordinary movie. Maybe the best movie I've seen all year. Alfonso Cuarón's autobiographical take on his childhood in Mexico. It is an exquisite piece of work. And of course, the rules the Golden Globes have is that foreign films can't be nominated for Best Picture. Which is unbelievably stupid. But it is nominated for foreign language film. That's Roma. Girl from Belgium. Never Look Away from Germany. And Shoplifters from Japan. None of those other movies. I've seen Shoplifters. I've seen Girl. I haven't seen the other two. But none of these movies are going to... It does not even... Just give it to Roma. Just give it. Best screenplay. Nick Bellalonga, Brian Curry, and Peter Farrelly for Green Book. Barry Jenkins for If Beale Street Could Talk. Adam McKay for Vice. Deborah Davis and Tony McNamara for The Favorite, and Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. Again, Alfonso Cuarón right there. But I love the screenplay for The Favorite. It's one of my favorite. I just think it's an incredibly clever screenplay. And so is Green Book. So, but it's Alfonso Cuarón. Best Director, Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Peter Farrelly for Green Book. When did anybody ever think that Peter Farrelly might get an Oscar? He might get an Oscar nomination. One of the Farrelly brothers, one of the directors of Kingpin, might get an Oscar nomination this year. Adam McKay for Vice, ridiculous. And Spike Lee for Black Klansman. Again, Alfonso Cuarón. Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Vice, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, Crazy Rich Asians, and Green Book. Those are your choices. My favorite out of that is The Favorite. And then motion picture drama. A Star Is Born, If Beale Street Could Talk, Black Panther, Black Klansman, and Bohemian Rhapsody. Out of all of those, Black Klansman is my favorite out of those. And I hate Bohemian Rhapsody. And that's ridiculous that it's nominated. I really hope it doesn't get a Best Picture nominee for the Academy Awards. So... lots of stupid stuff, you know, here. And again, splitting the categories up, but then not splitting them up for the supporting performances makes no sense. But that's the Golden Globes. That's what you get. So January 6th, Sunday night, January 6th, it will be on, and they'll announce the winners in both the TV and the motion picture categories. And as much as I moan about it and complain, of course I will watch it. I will watch the whole thing. I'll watch the red carpet coverage that starts, I think, Thursday. And you know, we'll see how it goes. And it's always a fun show to watch, even if it's like it's stupid. It's always a fun show to watch. People get bombed. You know what I mean? There's a lot of drinking going on. People like, what was it? Christine Lotti was in the bathroom when they announced that she was a winner, and she had to run out of the bathroom to get up on stage. And it's always interesting, you know, the seating at the Golden Globes, because the TV people are like, they put him in the back. You know, like, even though, you know, more movie stars are doing TV now. Like, are they really going to sit Julia Roberts in the back? Because she's nominated for TV. Are they going to sit Amy Adams? Is she going to be sitting in the back? I don't think so. Now you've blurred that line. You know what I mean? It's hard. I feel sorry for the people who have to do the seating chart now, because before it would be like, just put all the TV people in the second tier all the way in the back, put the movies and the movie stars in the front. Well, now movie stars are all over the TV, so I don't know what they're going to do. It's going to be interesting. So. All right, if you guys want to jump in with your Golden Globe thoughts, if you have thoughts about these nominees or some of your favorite things that you've seen this year, who do you hope will win? Who do you hope will get nominated? And Golden Globe stuff from the past is what we're going to jump into. And I've got the 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time we're going to go through. And we would love to hear from you. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Before we get into the 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time, which will lead into our You Big Dummy and Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and Fly Jam Friday stuff, we announced the other day that Kevin Hart was going to host the Academy Awards. Well, that's changed now. Just a few hours ago, Kevin Hart stepped down from hosting the Oscars. Kevin Hart is stepping down from hosting the Oscars after homophobic tweets surfaced on Thursday. The tweets between 2009 and 2011 included derogatory language referring to gay people and made disparaging comments about sexuality. Some of the tweets have since been deleted. I have made the choice to step down from hosting this year's Oscars, Hart said via Twitter. This is because I do not want to be a distraction on a night that should be celebrated by so many amazing, talented artists. I sincerely apologize to the LGBT community for my insensitive words from the past. I'm sorry that I hurt people. I am evolving and want to continue to do so. My goal is to bring people together, not tear us apart. Much love and appreciation to the Academy. I hope we can meet again. Hart announced on his official Instagram page that he would be the host of the Academy Awards for the first time in the coming year. For years, I have been asked if I would ever host the Oscars, and my answer was always the same. I said that it would be the opportunity of a lifetime for me as a comedian, and that it will happen when it's supposed to, he wrote on Tuesday. CNN reached out to Hart's team and the Academy for a response. So there'll be some follow-up on that. But it was only 2 days, and he stepped down. So now they'll announce another host, in the coming days or weeks. But yeah, Kevin Hart stepped down. Interesting. And that's only you reminded me off the air, Dan, that actually happened one other time. It was Eddie Murphy. Right? Because Brett Ratner was producing.
Right. I think under similar circumstances, something with Brett Ratner came up along those same lines. And then once he stepped away, Eddie Murphy said, I'm going to step away as well.
Right. Right. So that was the last time that happened. So interesting. So we'll see who actually the host is. I was not happy that Kevin Hart was going to be the host, because I thought he would be terrible hosting the Academy Awards. The circumstances are controversial and everything, but he will not be hosting it. So it's an interesting development. Anyway, it's awards season, and I have the 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time. Here we go. Number 20, Analyze This. No analysis is really needed to explain why the 1999 comedy Analyze This earned, or well received anyway, a nomination for Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical. The answer is obvious. Robert De Niro is in it, and therefore it's award worthy, right? Of course, that assumption begins to break down if you actually watch this lowbrow one-note film about a mobster who starts going to therapy. Sound funny? Well, we hope so, because it's only one of the two jokes the movie has to offer. The second had to wait until the Golden Globe nominations were announced. Now, I totally disagree with this. I think Analyze This is a funny... Analyze That, that's a different cup of tea. That, right? Analyze That is the sequel. Analyze This is the original. Yes, Analyze This is the original. Harold Ramis directed that movie. That's a funny movie. It's a comedy and it's funny. But I don't. Second one was terrible. I agree. The second one was really bad. But the first one's funny. I can see it being nominated for Best Comedy. It was a very funny movie. De Niro's hilarious in it. All right, how about this? Number 19, they say 9. Daniel Day-Lewis can do pretty much anything, including, it seems, land in his movies undeserved Golden Globe nominations. Director Rob Marshall tried to recapture his Chicago magic. By the way, director of the Mary Poppins movie. Chicago Magic, in this musical adaptation of the film 8½, featuring non-singers like Day-Lewis in most of the roles. Despite widespread critical indifference and the obvious fact that the original 8½ was a vastly superior movie to 9, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association still gave the movie a nod for Best Motion Picture, Comedy, or Musical. Yes, 9 is one of the few. You know, you don't hear a lot of criticism about Daniel Day-Lewis, and for good reason, because he's one of the greatest actors that's ever lived and is good in everything. He was not very good in 9, and 9, it was a terrible movie. It was a really bad movie. So I can see them complaining about that nomination. Maybe they just wanted to throw a musical in there as a nomination. I don't remember what else came out in 2009 on the comedy or musical front. But maybe they were just like, let's get a musical in there. Daniel Day-Lewis is in it, so that's what we'll do. But it's a bad movie. I mean, I think personally, I think it's the worst movie Daniel Day-Lewis has ever made. How about this one? The 1989 Best Actress category. So what happened? Well, for once, they managed to actually nominate some good choices, and that was such an unfamiliar situation that they immediately screwed it up by giving the award to Jodie Foster. And Shirley MacLaine and Sigourney Weaver. Yes, there were more winners, 3, than losers, 2. A situation that was made even sillier by the fact that one of the two snub nominees was Meryl Streep. Now we know why they keep having so many goofy nominees, because it makes it so much easier to vote for the winner. What did Shirley MacLaine get nominated for? I know Sigourney Weaver got nominated for Gorillas in the Mist. Jodie Foster got nominated for The Accused. What did Shirley MacLaine get nominated for? I don't remember. It would be from 1988. The movie would be from 1988. But I don't remember that. A three-way tie. I certainly don't remember that. I mean, it was 30 years ago, so I don't really remember it. But Jodie Foster would go on to win the Academy Award, deservedly so, for the Accused. But yeah, that's pretty weird that it was a three-way tie. Jodie Foster, Sigourney Weaver, and Shirley MacLaine. So I don't know what movie Shirley MacLaine was in.
It would have been it would have aired in 88.
No, it would have aired in 89, and the movie would be from 88. Because both Gorillas in the Mist and The Accused. What was Meryl Streep nominated for in 88? Well, she just, whatever it was a Meryl Streep movie, so of course she was nominated. It doesn't matter what it was, because she gets nominated every year. So it's a three-way tie. I'm trying to remember if that. I know there's been ties a few times in the Academy Awards, but I don't think the Academy Awards have ever had a three-way tie. That's insane. But a three-way tie for that. So, anyway, how about this? In 2001, they nominated Shrek. Look, 2001's animated hit Shrek was good at a lot of things, selling Happy Meals, pulling off fart jokes, making enough money to buy Mike Myers a dozen vacation homes, but Best Motion Picture, Comedy, or Musical? Maybe if this were the People's Choice Awards, but consider the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is supposed to consist of professional critics rather than easily amused 9-year-olds. Let's just say that this one was more of a stretch.
All right. Jodie Foster, Shirley MacLaine won for Madame Suseska.
Oh, Madame Suseska. Yeah. I totally forgot about that movie. Okay. I completely forgot about that movie. She did get nominated for the Academy Award too, for that. I don't think Shrek is. I mean, Shrek is fine. I don't think it's worthy of awards. It's fine. It was cute. How many Shreks now are there? There's like 3, right? And then the Puss in Boots,
right? And then some animated TV,
the TV stuff, yeah. And then they did the Broadway musical based on Shrek. I gotta say. You know, I've not seen the Broadway musical of Shrek, but the Shrek costume freaks me out. Like the dude in the Shrek costume, for some reason, it kind of gives me the willies. I think he looks creepy. All right, next here on the worst nominations, Nuts. This is the Barbra Streisand movie. Based on historical data, it would appear that there is an unwritten rule stating that any film featuring Barbra Streisand must be nominated. Exhibit A, 1987's Nuts, which earned not one but three Golden Globe nods. And by the way, Nuts currently has a Rotten Tomatoes fresh rating of 38%. Case closed. I like that movie. Now, it does feature Leslie Nielsen in a Speedo trying to kill Barbra Streisand. And it came out the same year as Naked Gun, so it was very weird. He was like a total lunatic in that movie. And but if you want to see Leslie Nielsen being an abusive John to a hooker, running around in just Speedos, that alone is worth renting Nuts. I actually think it's a good. I actually like Nuts. I think it's good. I don't know. I'm not one of that 38%. So, all right. Let's take a break here on WGN, and we've got the news coming up next. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are talking about the 20 worst Golden Globe nominations of all time. And they have a tendency to nominate stupid stuff. And yesterday those nominations were announced, and of course there was a good amount of stupid nominations that they put out there. But we're gonna have fun with some of this stuff, and we'll continue with what people think. If you guys have any comments about the current nominations or the Golden Globes in general, our phone lines and text lines are open at 312-981-7200. In just a little bit, we got our regular Friday features coming up. You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, leading into Fly Jams Friday. We also have another very disappointing and unfortunate Blackhawks Express that we're going to play. They've lost 6 games in a row. All right, let's get back to this list of the worst nominations in Golden Globe history. Salmon fishing in Yemen in 2012. I agree. I got to say, I totally agree with this one. For Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical, this year the spot for most inexplicable nomination was Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. And it doesn't stop there, as Salmon Fishing in the Yemen also landed nods for both of its stars, Ewan McGregor and Emily Blunt. 3 nominations? That's basically one for each person on Earth who saw the movie. Who knew that the Yemen Tourism Board could pull this off? Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Have you even heard of that movie, Dan?
I do remember hearing about it just because such a strange title.
It is such a weird title. I forgot Emily Blunt was in it. That was before Emily Blunt became, you know, Emily Blunt. How about this one? Going back to 1961, a majority of one. 1961's A Majority of One wasn't just nominated for Best Motion Picture Comedy, it actually won, beating out films like Breakfast at Tiffany's, among others. The problem? Well, let's just say it stars the legendary Alec Guinness as a Japanese guy. Oh, man. Well, wait a minute. So hold on a second. Let me just point something out here. Breakfast at Tiffany's also features an unbelievably offensive Asian stereotype played by Mickey Rooney. So was that the thing in 1961? Well, that would have been the 1960. So in 1960 was the thing like, hey, let's do offensive Asian stereotypes or, you know, hire white guys to play Asian guys and do it poorly? That's weird. I got to say, that's weird. All right, here we go. Dudley Moore was nominated in 1984 for Mickey and Maude. You know what's really funny, Dan? I love this story about Mickey and Maude. It's Blake Edwards' wacky comedy. And there are some funny things in Mickey and Maude. But, you know, Roy used to host, Roy Leonard, for those people who don't know, when I refer to Roy, it's Roy Leonard, my hero. Roy used to host screenings for the public, you know, usually at the Old Orchard or some of the theaters, and he would be there, he'd introduce the movie and shake hands and stuff. And so he had agreed to do a screening of Mickey and Maude. And so then he saw the movie. okay, before the screening, and he hated it. But he still hosted the screening because Roy's a pro. And while he was there, he didn't say anything about the movie. He, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm excited about this movie. He's like, oh, okay, because I came to the screening. And I'm like, I'm excited about this movie. Dudley Moore's funny. It's Blake Edwards. I can't wait. I'm very excited about it. He's like, all right, have a good time. And then he did the intro to the movie without, you know, he didn't give away the fact that he hated it. And then, like, the next day, I talked to him. I called him at the office to, you know, to say thanks and stuff. The next day, I talked to him. And he he's like, yeah, I had to just leave immediately after I introduced the movie because I hated it. Like, he hated Mickey and Maude. He hated it. But he had already agreed to host the screening based upon the fact that it's Blake Edwards, it's Dudley Moore. But here's what they say. Dudley Moore won the award for best performance by an actor in a motion picture comedy or musical. Now, we don't want to be haters because, A, nobody ever heard of this movie, and, B, Dudley Moore was chosen over Bill Murray and Ghostbusters, Eddie Murphy, and Beverly Hills Cop, and Steve Martin, and All of Me. Oh, my God. Wow. Clearly, Moore had something in his pocket behind the scenes, as between 1979 and 85, he was nominated in this category 5 times. Well, listen. You know, 10, you know, he follows up 10 with Arthur. He was big, man. There was a time when Dudley Moore was huge. And then after Arthur, he basically just said yes to any script. Like, he did so many crappy movies. Dudley Moore did so many terrible movies. You know, but when you start, because 10 is one of my favorite movies of all time. 10 is, I think 10 is the, because in the movie, he's struggling with turning 40. That's, and it's a midlife crisis movie. It's one of the best movies, besides Sideways, it's one of the best movies about turning 40 or having that crisis. It's really, I mean, it's also hilarious, and Bo Derek is hot. So, but for him to beat Steve Martin and all, have you seen All of Me, Dan?
I have not.
Do you know what it's about?
No.
Okay. The spirit of Lily Tomlin, there's some sort of mix-up in this ceremony, and the spirit of Lily Tomlin, who's dead, gets into the body of Steve Martin. So he's got a battle with her. It is a great performance, like a really great physical performance, because he's doing, you know, he's got to do like the physicality of Lily Tomlin, and then fighting his own body to get control over it. It's a great performance, like a great performance. I can't believe that he didn't get it. All right, how about this? Eddie Murphy and The Nutty Professor. This was the movie that revived Murphy's career long after a stagnant period, and in a way, its nomination for Best Performance by Actor in a Motion Picture Comedy or More can be justified, as Murphy played roughly 800 different parts in the film. So that's kind of impressive on a technical level. On a good film level, though, one fails somewhere between Eddie Murphy and Fat Suit, a lesson that had been learned 15 years ago. It could have saved both Murphy and America a lot of heartbreak. I think The Nutty Professor's funny. I'm telling you, that first scene around the dinner table, that's one of the fun. Every time I watch The Nutty Professor, I'm crying laughing at the end of that scene. Eddie Murphy's brilliant in that movie. Brilliant. Playing every character except the little Hercules. Hercules, Hercules. I love that movie. I think it's funny. And that's another one that I was like, no, because it's, you know, The Nutty Professor. But then Jerry Lewis got an executive producer credit on it and said he saw it and approved of it. So I was like, okay. And then it turned out to be really funny. Sabrina, 1995. There's nothing inherently terrible about 1995 Sabrina, which stars Harrison Ford, Julia Armand, and Greg Kinnear. That's the second time this movie has come up in a week. but there's nothing particularly good about it either, which is a problem considering it's a remake of the 1955 Billy Wilder classic of the same name. If there's one thing our list shows, though, it's that there's nothing the Hollywood Foreign Press finds quite as impressive as Pedigree, which is why this one earned 3 nods, including Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. The Golden Globes have a reputation of being more progressive than the Oscars, but they don't show it with this boring homage. How about this one? Bobby in 2006. Lindsay Lohan is an industry and national punchline. Luckily, she had Emilio Estevez directing and stalwarts like Ashton Kutcher co-starring alongside her in this heavy-handed and moralistic look at the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in 1968. It also has Anthony Hopkins in it, which apparently was sure enough to garner a Best Motion Picture Drama nomination. Wow, that guy, I don't even remember. That movie's that's a terrible movie. Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. It's safe to say that this movie is the only musical featuring Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton ever to land a nomination. for Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical. You know who's great in that movie? In Best Little Whorehouse? Charles Durning, man. Charles Durning. Always good, man. Always good. I love that guy. I just love him. Everything about him, man. War hero. You know, a great actor. He nimble. He dances his ass off in Best Little Whorehouse. He's great in it. Burlesque. Oh my God, was this movie bad? Speaking of utterly preposterous nominees, Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical, the 2011 Golden Globes served up Burlesque, which featured Cher, Christina Aguilera, and Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell was in Burlesque? Wow. How did I not remember that? Because I was a Veronica Mars fan, and that's after Veronica Mars. Wow, I don't remember that at all. I don't remember her being in there at all. All right, and of course, now we have to get to The Tourist. This is one we mentioned before. It wasn't just the movie was nominated for Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical, even though it was neither a comedy nor a musical. It starred Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. They were each individually nominated as well, plus the movie completely tanked the box office. How about this? Courtney Love for The People versus Larry Flint. She's good in that movie. Like, really good. Courtney Love knows her way around crazy. Yes, she does. But even she had to be doing a double take when she landed a nomination for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama for The People versus Larry Flint. Adding to the weirdness of the evening, Love didn't win, but Madonna did. Taking the for Evita. All we can guess is that the Hollywood Foreign Press were hoping that the two might get into a divalicious catfight on stage, because otherwise we're going to write that one off that the whole ceremony was a fever dream. I don't agree with that. Courtney Love was great in that movie. How about this? Jim Carrey for How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Oof. We'll give the live-action adaptation of the beloved Dr. Seuss book this much. It wasn't as terrible as the Mike Myers adaptation of The Cat in the Hat. That's true. They're both bad, but The Cat in the Hat is just unspeakable. But simply not being the epic train wreck isn't enough criteria for earning a Best Actor in the Motion Picture Comedy or Musical nomination like Jim Carrey got. He's done some really funny movies over the years, and he deserved recognition for it, but this is not one of them. Sarah Jessica Parker for The Family Stone. Sarah Jessica Parker was something of a Golden Globes favorite in the last decade, earning 7 nominations for Sex and the City and winning 4 times. But we never realized just how much the Hollywood Foreign Press loved Carrie Bradshaw until Parker was nominated for a Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture Comedy or Musical for The Family Stone, a very bad rom-com dramedy in which she played a shrew obsessing over an engagement ring. Mel Gibson, What Women Want. You know that they're making a What Man Want?
I did hear that.
And it's Taraji P. Henson, and it looks awful. But it did have a funny, it does have a, I actually laughed at one of the jokes in the trailer. Here's what I laughed at. One of her assistant is a white guy who works for her. And that's the first person who she can, because she gets hit on the head and she can hear the inner thoughts of men, which is what exactly the Mel Gibson movie was. So at one point, and what happened was she went to like a psychic or something, and who gave her some tea, and she drank the tea and it got her all screwed up, and that's how she banged her head, because the tea was all filled with all kinds of stuff. And so she explains that I had tea and I drank the tea. And she's like, and her assistant is like, you drank tea? You drank the tea? And she's like, yeah, I did. And she goes, I thought black people stopped drinking tea after Get Out. I laughed out loud at that. Nothing else in the trailer looks good, but that's a funny line. I thought black people stopped drinking tea after Get Out. That's a great line. So Mel Gibson got nominated for What Women Want. How about this? Green Card. That's not, my dad keeps calling Green Book Green Card. He gets the name wrong. He loves Green Book. It's like his favorite movie now ever, the Viggo Mortensen film. He loves it. But Green Card was a horrible movie. If this were a list about worst Golden Globe winners of all time, Green Card wouldn't just be number one. It would probably be the entire list, because nothing else comes close. Gerard Depardieu, in his first English language role, plays a guy who tries to get a green card by marrying Andy McDowell. Ghost, Home Alone, and Pretty Woman were among those that lost to Green Card, but the Hollywood Foreign Press really likes Depardieu. You know, unfortunately, Peter Weir, director of Fearless, directed that movie. All right, and then finally, number one, Patch Adams. Patch Adams isn't just the worst film to ever receive a Golden Globe nomination. It's one of the worst movies ever made, period. Robin Williams plays a doctor who is a clown and spends nearly 2 hours giving the world its best argument in favor of euthanasia. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. You ever see Patch Adams, Dan?
I have not.
You should count your lucky stars. It's a horrendous movie. So, well, there it is. Proof positive that the Golden Globes are dumb, and yet I'm going to watch it. So, there you go. All right, let's take a break. We got some weather, and then after the weather, we will jump into our regular features, starting off with You Big Dummy.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no, you big dummy. You dummy.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Friday morning. That means all the Friday features are about to begin. That's what's coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. But now it's time for You Big Dummy. You know what this is? This is where we gather together a bunch of stupid news stories about stupid people doing dumb things. We read them and we vote on them. These are all real dumb news stories. We vote on them. And again, after we do the wrap up here, you call in at 312-981-7200. First person through gets to be our third vote on who's the biggest dummy of the week. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy one. Police in Pennsylvania are trying to figure out who left a significant amount of cash inside a children's book donated to a library. Workers at the Mannheim Township Public Library discovered the money hidden inside a copy of the children's book Diary of a Wimpy Kid. The book was donated on... Okay, sorry. I had to do something technical there for a second. Sorry. The book was donated on September 18th, but the money wasn't discovered until later. Any person who makes a claim to the money will have to provide specific details, as there are unique identifiers that only the true owner would know, police said.
But the only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. Only child is a dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy two. A District of Columbia clerk and a supervisor refused to accept a New Mexico man's driver's license because they believed New Mexico was a foreign country. What? Gavin Clarkson told the Los Santa Cruz Sun News that it happened on November 20th at the District Columbia Court's Marriage Bureau. After showing his New Mexico ID, Clarkson said the clerk told him he needed an international passport to get the marriage license. Clarkson said he protested to the supervisor, who also told him that he needed a foreign passport. The clerk finally concluded New Mexico was a state after Clarkson objected three times. The clerk granted a license to Clarkson and his fiancée. I can see the confusion, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy. And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
Dummy number three, dummy number three, dummy number three. Two people are behind bars after allegedly running an illegal dental practice out of a bus. According to Miami... there's a real shock right there. According to Miami-Dade police officials, the two were arrested earlier this month for practicing healthcare without a license. While one was also charged with possession of drugs with intent to sell. during an undercover investigation, officials scheduled an appointment for a dental procedure. They arrived at the bus, which was parked in a parking lot. One of the suspects diagnosed, evaluated, and offered to treat the officer. That's when the police move in and arrested the two. While police were searching the bus, they found a bag containing various prescription drugs and other dental products. Investigators are asking people who may have been treated to come forward. That's the craziest story I've ever heard. That might be the craziest story I've ever heard.
I'm not kidding you. You're a big dummy. You bigger dummy than my dummy.
Dummy number four. Dummy number four. Dummy number four. A 17-year-old playing around in an abandoned bank ended up needing to be rescued from inside a vault. Police said two teenagers entered the former Bank of America branch Wednesday, and one of them, a 17-year-old boy, ended up locked inside the vault at around 1:30 p.m. Police responded with the Hollywood Fire Department, a Broward Sheriff Fire Rescue Technical Rescue Team, and at least two private vault technicians to attempt to free the boy. However, an attempt to drill into the wall of the bank failed. Police said the boy was released from the vault after more than 3 hours when a Bank of America employee from the branch's new location was able to come to the scene and give authorities the combination to open the door. The teenagers were released into the custody of their parents.
Dummy! Dummy!
Dummy number five. Dummy number five. A first-time political candidate in Northeast Arkansas has learned a valuable civics lesson. Vote early. Cliff Farmer didn't make it to the polls in time to vote, and his race for Hoxie City Council ended up in a tie. The Jonesboro Sun reported that Farmer and his wife were returning from a Florida vacation on Tuesday when their plane landed only an hour before the polls closed. The plane landed in Memphis, Tennessee, which is 80 miles from Hoxie. His wife voted early, but Farmer said he intended to vote after they returned. That resulted in Farmer and incumbent alderwoman Becky Lineberg receiving 223 votes. She and Lineberg said that she voted. A winner will be declared next week by a coin toss at another game of chance.
Get lost, dummy. Before this game, you were just a plain dummy. But after tonight, you'd be a broke dummy.
All right. We'll vote after the news. This is a pretty solid week. Pretty solid. All right. Let's take a break. The news is up next. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features are happening, including Fly Jams Friday. And you can call in for with your request at 312-981-7200. We're also got You Big Dummy and Straight Out of Context coming up. But no, we're doing You Big Dummy. We've got Nick D Show Spies and Straight Out of Context coming up. So let's, we got to vote. We heard all the dummy stories, so we have to vote. You Big Dummy. Okay, let's do the recap. And again, right after the recap, you will be our third vote. First person through at 312-981-7200 gets to vote for what they think is the dummiest story, and you'll be our third vote. All right, here we go. We got the dummy who left a ton of cash in a donated book. We got the clerk and the supervisor who thought New Mexico was a foreign country. We got the people operating an illegal dentist's office out of a bus. We got the person who was locked inside a bank vault. And we got the candidate who was late to the polls and his race ended in a tie. Good week. Good, strong week of dummies. All right, Dan, where are you going to go with this one?
So, obviously, the person put that money in the book thinking it'd be safekeeping.
Yeah.
But then why put it anywhere near anything you would be donating?
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like...
Maybe somebody just said, this Diary of a Wimpy Kid, let's get it out of here.
Right.
There's something funny about the fact that it's Diary of a Wimpy
Kid. Yes, exactly. So there's that aspect of it. But still, you know, you then hide that book quite a bit.
Yeah. You would think. And,
you know, the fact that they were operating an illegal dentist's office out of a bus. You know, like the illegal dentist stuff I can kind of understand, you know, but... Find a space, man. Find a dirty space like you see in the movies, not a bus.
Yeah.
And they don't describe what kind of bus. So, you know, was it a big yellow school bus? Was it a, you know, passenger bus?
Yeah.
Coach bus? I do love the fact that they tried to, like, break the kid out of the bank vault by, like, drilling a hole in like it was a movie.
Yeah.
And then eventually just had to get somebody
from the Bank of America
to come over and just be like, beep, boop, beep, boop, all right, come on out.
Yeah.
But the fact he was running for city council, you'd hope would mean that he would be a smart person. And, like, once you start, like, planning your flight, you start putting things together. Like, okay, we're going to be here, and it's going to be here when we arrive, and that means I'm going to have to travel this amount of time, and it usually takes this. So the fact he didn't vote early, it didn't dawn on him to vote early, makes me think he probably would have been a good councilman anyway. So I'm going to go five.
You're going five. You're going the candidate who was late to the polls. Now that in the truest sense of the word, he is a dummy. You know what I mean? Like, he's truly a dummy. There's no question about it. So in that regard, I agree with you. I mean, that is the dumbest person out of the five. There's no question. But I got to go with the people operating the dentist office out of the bus. It's the craziest story I've ever heard. And who the hell would show up for dental work and go, yeah, I'll climb aboard this bus for my dental work? That's one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. I mean, it really is. So, That's we got one vote for the candidate who was late to the polls, and the other vote for the dentist office out of the bus. So we have our deciding vote, as always, one of our listeners, and Glenn got in here first. Glenn, who are you voting for?
I got to go with dummy number three.
Dummy number three, the dentist office outside the bus.
That's the one.
Okay. All right, Glenn, thanks, man. So that's our dummy of the week. That's really a crazy. Where did you find that story?
You know, there's just part of the selection of AP stories that I was going through like I do every week.
Man, oh, man. I mean, that is ridiculous. And it's Florida, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. Let's move on to...
And did the person who was doing the inspecting have a dental degree? That's another question.
That's a good question. Yeah. There are so many... There are so many layers to this story, Dan.
Should we call Mike View and see if his work on the mob doctor could... is there a mob dentist?
That's funny. You know what's really funny is that I just got a text from Mike View. For some reason, asking me if I know Jeff Hoover. And I said, yes, I do. I know Jeff Hoover from WGN-TV. I don't know why. No explanation, but that's what the text was. You know what? I'll text him back about the dental stuff.
Yep. I'm sure he learned so much on the set.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Mob doctor. All right. Okay.
Oh, real quick, 870. Oh, crap. Hoaxy is only 10 miles south of me. I was not expecting local to make you victim.
Is that right? Wow. Very nice. Did you vote?
Yeah. 847 adds Barney Fife got locked in the bank vault and busted out through the beauty shop wall.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Good old Barney Fife. All right. Dummies. All right. Let's, you want to try? Are we ready for this thing?
Yep. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better
duck. Because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping. But when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight. Out of context, context, context. Context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context. 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 Context.
That's right. You know, straight out of context. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we'll play them back as we do every Friday and laugh like children. Okay, Dan, are we ready?
We are. We begin with Paul in Maryland. He heard this one of Patty Vasquez.
You throw out of town, chances are I've done a one-nighter there.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right.
Kevin from Hillside emailed this one of John Williams.
And it's great because folks come to love and see your thing.
That's good. Okay.
Tom from Bartlett sent in this one of Lou Manfredini.
And then you lie on your back.
Oh, okay. I thought he was going to go a little further. But that's good enough. Okay.
Stream with Steve heard this one of Dave Plyer.
I don't see it up here properly.
Well, all right.
Stream with Steve also emailed this one of Dave Schwann.
It doesn't work if you don't turn it on.
Oh, boy. Come on, Schwanny. Schwanny, he and Dean are just, they're just a couple of filthy people.
I think that was actually on during Dave's show.
Oh, was that Dave's show? No. Okay, well, either way.
Still, it's true.
Absolutely. Good old Schwanny. All right.
Celine, Kevin from Lakewood, and Tim sent in this one of Wendy Snyder.
It was glistening, and I just wanted to lick it.
Oh, come on. Come on, man. Wow. Oh, man. All right.
One more before we break. Kathy and Antioch heard this one of Lou Manfredini.
It's my job to help you feel better.
Oh, man. Good for you, Lou. All right, we got more Straight Out of Context coming up right here on WGN, and we'll follow that with Nick D's show Spies, and then DJ Shagru will come out, and you can get your requests in at 312-981-7200 when we do some Fly Jams for Fly Jams Friday. Okay, we're breaking for weather here. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context. 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 Yeah, that's right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're doing our regular Friday features. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right. Straight out of context. When we hear filthy stuff coming from everybody who works here, we're in the middle of it. Let's get back to it. Right, Dan? Wait a minute. There you go.
Thank you. Got two more here. Len emailed this one of you.
Who doesn't love wood? What was I talking about?
You were reacting to last week's out of context in which Lou also proclaimed that he loved wood.
Oh. Oh, okay. All right. Everybody loves wood. Okay. All right.
And finally, Jesse sent in this one of Steve Cochran.
Who doesn't love wood? Oh.
Oh.
Well, I like that one so much, we got to hear it again.
Let's try this one.
And you know me, I'm all about personal growth.
That's funny. That's funny. All right. Thank you, everybody. And continue to listen 24/7 to this station. Keep your ears peeled. And anytime anybody says something that sounds vaguely dirty, you pull it out of context, it makes you giggle. Jot it all down again and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, let's try this.
Spies.
Hey!
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody. Spies.
Spies. Spies.
Like us.
Ah, yes. That's right. Nick D. Show Spies. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You put on your trench coat and you become a spy and jot down all the information and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay, what do we got?
We have two clips this week. Our spies were Peter Indicator and Tony. Patty Vasquez was talking to Domati Pongo about Christmas movies he had and had not seen. Scrooge came up, as did your movie club.
Ah.
All right, let's go through some of the holiday movies. Let's see, Domati, let's see if you've seen. Have you ever seen Tim Allen in The Santa Claus?
Never.
How about Bad Santa?
Nope.
Oh, I think you might like that one. Scrooged, which is going to be, if you have the night off, if you're available, Nick D is screening that next Tuesday night at the Rosemont.
Oh, nice.
And they're also doing a pre-show dinner at the Caddyshack restaurant, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant out in Rosemont.
Thanks for the plug, Patty. That was nice of you. By the way, the turnout was great. I want to say one more time how much fun Tuesday night was. It was really great. And I want to thank the everybody over at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. The food was great. The service was great. The management is really, really great. And we had a really nice turnout. And the restaurant was very happy because all the tables were full. So I want to thank my listeners and my film club members for coming out. It was a really fun night, and everybody had a good time watching Scrooge. We had a nice meal at the Caddyshack restaurant. By the way, Domate, don't see Bad Santa. It sucks. But again, I'm in the minority on that one, right, Dan? I'm in the minority on Bad Santa.
Yeah, I think so.
I hate that movie. I hate that movie. I don't think it's funny. I think it's mean-spirited, and I don't like it at all. Anyway, by the way, real quickly, I want to take this opportunity to plug my next film club. The tickets are on sale already. We've got them up. They're ready to go, so you can reserve your seats for one of the greatest movies ever made, Slapshot. One of the greatest sports movies of all time. The best hockey movie ever made. Paul Newman, classic, Hanson Brothers, Slapshot. Unbelievably funny. If you've never seen it, you got to see it. If you've never seen it on the big screen, it's digitally remastered, and it's going to look fantastic on the giant screen. We get the big love seats in the theater. And it's truly one of the funniest movies ever made, and one of my favorite Paul Newman performances ever. It's a true classic. So we're showing Slapshot on the big screen. You got to come out and see it. And it's on Tuesday, January 8th. Tuesday, January 8th. It starts at 8 o'clock. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movico. Parking is free. It's only $10 to get in to see one of the funniest movies ever made, one of the greatest sports movies of all time, one of the best Paul Newman performances. I love this movie so much. It's one of my all-time favorites, a total classic, and I'm so excited to see it on the big screen with a big crowd. So get out there and reserve your seats now. Slapshot, Tuesday, January 8th, starting at 8 o'clock. Meet at 7, have some cocktails, have some food, and then we'll all go into the premiere theater. I'll introduce the movie. It starts at 8 o'clock. We'll show Slapshot then afterwards. There's a lot to talk about because I know a lot about this movie. This is truly one of my favorite movies. So I know a lot of behind-the-scenes stories, and there's some actual real hockey players in it, and there's stories behind that. It's going to be a fun night. If you've never seen Slapshot, you got to come out and see it. And, so 312, or no, don't call that number. Just go to AMCtheaters.com right now. Go to the seating chart, pick out the seats that you want. It's on sale right now. Get your reservations now. AMCtheaters.com, Tuesday, January 8th, Slapshot on the big screen. Okay, cool. So we have one more spy.
We do. Later in the show, Patty was also continuing to talk about movies that people had seen and not seen. She was talking about Westerns, got really into it, and realized that if she didn't stop, she'd be there all night.
There's a movie that doesn't get as much attention. I love the movie. And it was actually, I think, remade into a Mark Wahlberg movie, The Sons of Katie Elder with John Wayne.
Oh, wow.
I like that one a lot. Oh, okay. You know what? We have to stop.
Okay.
Because otherwise, we're going to be in a Nick D's show, and I'm going to be like, let me tell you about Cowboys.
Okay. Sons of Katie Elder is a really terrific movie. And it is. It's not, you know, of the John Wayne movies, that's one that doesn't come up as much. I mean, he's made so many great Westerns, and that's a really, really terrific movie. Was it remade with Mark Wahlberg?
I had not heard that.
I hadn't either. But, yeah. Well, anyway, it's a terrific movie. Patty's right about that. So,
Four Brothers is loosely based.
Okay.
The Sons of Katie.
I see that. Yeah, very loosely based. Oh, okay. All right. I didn't realize that. Did not realize that. So, all right. Well, there it is. There's Nick D Show Spies. Thanks, everybody. Keep your ears peeled again. And if I am mentioned, or the show is mentioned in any capacity 24 hours a day here, jot it down who said it and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We'll play them back again next week. All right, should we play the thing with the thing?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Yeah, man. Fly Jams Friday. DJ Shagru just got out of the TARDIS. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky. Esmeralda the Heart Melda is Meldon Hearts somewhere in the city. Viggity Viggity Vic, verified double V, running around like a lunatic in the newsroom like he always does. And officially, it's Fly Jams Friday. This is where you can call up and request any R&B song, funky song, all that cool stuff. Phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Celebrating all things funky and R&B related on Fly Jams Friday. Should we play my first cut?
You dropped the bomb on me, baby. You dropped the bomb on me.
But you turned me
on. You dropped the bomb on me, baby. You dropped the bomb on me.
You were my friend. You were my friend. You dropped the bomb on me. You turned me up. You turned me on. You turned me loose. And you turned me wrong.
You dropped the bomb on me.
Yeah.
Baby.
That is such a great song. I know we've heard it many times on Fly Jams Friday. And Dan, you get to see the video. The video is ridiculous.
Yes.
The outfits that they're wearing, and that it's ridiculous. And they're just kind of like doing like a choreography thing where they're just kind of chugging along. I love that video. It's one of my favorite bad sort of videos, 80s videos. Yeah, drop the bomb on me, baby. That's a great song. Such a fly jam. See, that's an example of what we're talking about this morning on Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200. Claudia from Edison Park picks this one.
That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy.
Such a great song. It's one of my favorite Lionel Richie compositions of all time, I gotta say. And I always like to mention the Faith No More version. Dan, have you ever heard the Faith No More version?
I have, yes.
You know, you would think Faith No More, it's like, oh, they're gonna, like, you know, go nuts with it and thrash it up and have some, you know, some really heavy guitar and all that stuff. No, it's a great, like, very faithful, lovely version of that song. If you've never heard the Faith No More, and oddly, Faith No More, not known for that kind of music at all, but it's this really, just this like really lovely, faithful version of Easy, and you can check it out. You can check it out online. It's great. I love it. And they play it live. Whenever I've seen Faith No More, they always like kind of come back with an encore and play that during their encore or their second set. So, yeah, check it out. Faith No More's version of Easy. You can see it online. I'm sure it's everywhere. All right. We're going to break here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for requests. It's Fly Jams Friday. And it'll continue after the news, which is up after this.
Baby, we can do it. Take the time. Do it right. We can do it, baby. Do it tonight. Baby, we can do it. Take the time. Do it right. We can do it, baby. Do it tonight. Baby, we can do it.
Yeah.
Take the time. Do it right.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich comes in with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran will be here at 6 for your morning drive. It's Friday morning, and we're getting funky. That means Fly Jams Friday. And you can get your requests in at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up in a few minutes, we will play back the Blackhawks Express from last night's game. It's yet another disappointing, depressing Blackhawks Express, but we always play the Express the morning following a game, and we'll do that again coming up in just a few minutes. So get your Fly Jam requests in at 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here is Chuck from Delvin on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
We were watching the Blackhawks last night, and I told my wife, I think I just heard Nick DiGiulio's head explode.
Yeah, yeah. We were actually, you know, like in that third period where they had that lead that only lasted 42 seconds. We were actually in the car on the way to work when it happened. So yeah,
they're killing me.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear "A Funky Christmas" by the Whispers.
Here we go.
It feels like Christmas. I know this must be the first fucking Christmas. Dancing, ooh, I feel like dancing. Oh, the music's so entrancing. I feel like dancing.
Yeah. Funky Christmas, man. Chuck, thanks for the call, man. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Hey, Dan, do we know what the date would be for our Christmas fly jam?
It would be the 21st of
right.
February, so we're 2 weeks away.
December.
I'm sorry, yes. We're moving Christmas to February. Sorry, folks, FY.
Yeah, so December 21st will be all Christmassy fly jams. So we like to do that. And there are a lot of discovered that there are a lot of Christmas fly jams out
Indeed.
There. And we just played one right there. But it'll be like the official Christmas version of Fly Jams Friday will be on December 21st. So, all right. Jay had a request. My fly jam request is 1978's One Way Ticket by a group named Eruption. Have we played this song before?
If we did, I don't remember.
I don't remember it either. I think that's because it's very rare nowadays, because we've been doing Fly Jams Friday for so long. It's very rare that we get a new fly jam that we've never played before, but I think we just did. I think we just did. Thank you, Jay. The group is called Eruption. Wow. Wow. Okay. One-way ticket. One-way ticket. That's pretty good.
It's catchy.
Yeah, very catchy.
Trains seem to be a reoccurring theme on the Fly Jam Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Preferred mode of transportation for many Fly Jam artists.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess if we look back at it and do a little study, that would be the case. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Charlie on WGN. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. Go ahead, Charlie.
I'd like to hear Sweet Charlie Baby by Jackie Moore from 1973.
All right, here we go. Guy named Charlie requesting that song. You know, I don't think there are any songs with my name in them. Just thinking about that. Now, Dan, you first of all, you got a classic Elton John song
and a classic Irish song.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think I have. I mean, I'm not counting Jolly Saint Nick or whatever. You know what I mean? Maybe that. I mean that's one.
Right.
There are a lot of songs that have Saint Nick in them, But I mean, just like a non-Christmas, non-Santa-related song, I don't think there are any. I really don't.
A quick internet search agrees with you.
Yeah.
All of them are obviously played on words of like Nick of Time and things like that.
But right. But not the name Nick. Is there a Nicholas? Are there any Nicholas songs? Because that is my name. As you know, I like to be like Topher Grace and go by Olis.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think so. Not a very popular name for songs. Anyway. And it's really unusual because my name rhymes with a lot of really interesting stuff. having grown up as, you know, having grown up through my childhood and teenage years, I've heard them all. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I think there's a Nicky. There's a Nicky song with Nicky in it.
Well, I mean, there's the infamous Prince song.
Yeah, but that's N-I-K-K-I, but still. Mm. Yeah, Darling Nicky. I think that's as close as we can get.
There you go. I might have found something. I will need to cue it off air, so maybe we'll go to Roscoe and then...
let's do it. Let's go to Roscoe. Hey, Roscoe.
Hi, Nick, and I wanted to tell you, I just relocated back to the Midwest from Virginia. I've listened to your show on and off when I visited folks here since you were substituting, and I've now rearranged my sleep schedule so I could wake up in time for your show.
Oh, man, that is so sweet. That is really, really sweet. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Love you guys.
Thank you. All right, what was your request?
Well, I'm starting an exercise routine to get rid of all this cortisol fat, so I need to hear Get Up Off of That Thing by James Brown.
All right, let's hear it.
Everybody ready? Follow me. Get up off of that thing and shake it. You get up off.
There you go, Roscoe. I hope that helps you out. Good luck with the exercise program.
Thanks a bunch.
All right,
bye-bye.
And thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join in. Is it a person rearranging their sleep schedule? That's pretty amazing, right?
Indeed.
Wow.
All right, speaking of amazing.
Yeah.
This guy goes by the guy who sings your name over and over. That's his artist name.
His artist name is the guy who sings your name over and over. That's his name.
And not surprisingly, he has a song called Nicholas, or called the Nicholas Song.
Okay.
Nicholas, 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 Nicholas. Nicholas, 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 N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, Nicholas, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, Nicholas, 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 Nicholas.
How long does this go on?
A minute and a half.
I like that he spelled it out. That was pretty. That was a nice little touch, spelling out the name. So, what does he do? Everybody's name? Is that like his gig?
Brandon, 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 Brandon. B-R-A-N-D-O-N, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. Brandon, 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 Brandon.
I love this guy. Where did you find this guy?
I just searched for Nicholas Song on YouTube.
And this, what's his name again? The guy who sings your name over and over?
Yep.
I love that guy. That's fantastic. I love that the tune is exactly the same. He just, all he does is he sings a different name, but it's the same song over and over again. That's pretty good.
He expands his to cities.
Dallas, 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 Dallas. D-A-L-L-A-S. D-A-L-L-A-S. Dallas, 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 Dallas. Dallas, Dallas, Dallas. Dallas, Dallas, Dallas.
That could also be a name, too. Dallas Green. Oh, that's funny. So his repertoire is not just your name, but the name of cities too. Wow. Does he have a website, or is it a YouTube channel?
It is a YouTube channel.
That's pretty great. All right, we got a break here first, and then we're going to play something that's not pretty great. And that would be the Blackhawks Express from last night's game. But let's do the weather first. All right, we got some more fly jams here, Dan. Oh, that's me. Come on, man. Larry Blackman. You got to love Larry Blackman. That's Cameo. He's got his red cod piece and his high top fade and his fantastic mustache. Did you enjoy Cameo back in the day, Dan?
I only briefly knew of them, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah. I always loved Word Up! That's my Larry Blackman.
I thought he came in studio. Looked away.
I wonder if he's still, like, you know, because they would be on, at this point, they would be, like, on the nostalgia tours, right? At this point, I wonder if he still wears the red cod piece. You still think he comes out with the crazy red cod piece on?
I mean,
it's kind of his trademark.
Yeah, you know.
Just like Candy giving me a heart attack. That's my Larry Blackman, see? All right, we got a request from Willie. Willie, up in Gurnee. He's up in Gurnee. Well, if you're in Wisconsin, you're not up in Gurnee. If someone's in Wisconsin and you say Willie up in Gurnee, it's down in Gurnee. Anyway, he wanted to hear some Curtis Blow.
Breaks in the bus, breaks on the car. Breaks to make you a superstar. Breaks to win and breaks to lose. But these here breaks rock your shoes. And these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up.
Curtis, yeah, man. Curtis Blow. You got to love Curtis Blow. Guy's a legend. Okay, I think we got time for one more. And this is 630 area code. Wants some classic James Brown. Yeah. Can't go wrong with James Brown, man. Can't do it. All right. Everybody have a great weekend. We will be back Monday morning. We'll have the movie reviews with Colin, Eric, and Jim. And then we will also have my dad calling in to tell a joke and much more. Dan, enjoy your weekend and have a great time at the Bears game.
Thank you.
That's going to be a fun night for you. Dan will be off on Monday morning. Dan Long will be filling in, and that's all coming up. Right now, though, let's break. The news is up next.